Ladies and gentlemen, recorded in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, it's time for Fight Night Picks with your host, Frank
and Matt
Allen.
I'm really looking forward to this week, and we've got UFC 255 coming up, and hey, this is a much better card than some of the cards that we've been accustomed to the last few weeks. And I mean, hey, we did take a little bit of a hit last weekend. I mean, you were coming off a 9-1 performance. I was 8-2, fell back down to earth. And I mean, the last 3 to 4 weeks were absolutely insane. I mean, I have to say it, and you know, in honor of full transparency, I went 5-4, you went 4-5.
That was bad.
But this week, we are coming back with a vengeance. We really appreciate everybody that's joined in the channel. We've reached over 17,000 subscribers. Matt's going full-time with Fight Night Picks. Maybe someday I can be close behind him. Hashtag Free Craig. But overall, I'm really looking forward to this one, Matt. I mean, we have two title fights up at the top, two flyweight title fights. You have Valentina Shevchenko defending her belt against the ever-dangerous Brazilian in Jennifer Maia. We also have Brazil's Deivison Figueiredo taking on Alex Perez. And I'm really
great
looking
fight.
Forward to these two fights. Very well matched. I mean, you talk about the women's flyweight division, maybe not as much parity as the men's. And I know a lot of people like to kind of slag on the men's flyweight division. The Weasel, I'm sure you already follow him over on YouTube, made a very compelling argument for that men's flyweight division. And again, you might be down on this card, but hopefully we can bring you right back up. So let's pump it up and get excited for these fights, Matt, because there's a lot of under-the-radar ones. I mean, Nicholas Dalby taking on Daniel Rodriguez is just one of many. Luis Cosse, he's taking on Sasha Platnikov, a prospect that I've been following for quite some time. So, Matt, let's really dive into our possible fight of the nights, and we'll get into yours to kick it off. I mean, the two Brandons.
Wow.
Who let the Scots outside? In this one, it's who let the Brandons outside?
I don't know, but I'm really glad they did, because this fight, I truly believe, will be the fight of the night, almost hands down. I'm that confident in the pick. When you have a Brandon Moreno fight, you know that it's going to be volume striking, heavy scrambling, and it's just going to be a lot of fun because there's always something going on. And the matchmaking here was perfect. Now, we can get to who deserved to jump into the main event on short notice, whether it be Alex Perez or Brandon Moreno, but that's the good thing about the flyweight division. The flyweight division is good enough for Alex Perez fighting Deivison Figueiredo. I'm pretty excited for that fight. If Brandon Moreno was put in there instead, I would have been excited for that. Like, there's quite a few guys in that top five who all could challenge Figueiredo right now, so I do think this is probably going to be your title eliminator. And Brandon Royval has looked phenomenal. He's only had two UFC fights, but I don't know if you can impress any more in your two UFC fights. And his last fight against Kai Kara France, not only was it one of the better fights of the year, it was absolutely crazy. It showed a kind of a side of Brandon Royval that we didn't know of, at least up until that point. You know the ground game, you know the submissions. His stand-up is phenomenal. He's really grown his Muay Thai arsenal. He fights a lot like Charles Oliveira now, where he's got that real high guard, keeps his elbows high, not afraid to use his elbows either.
That Factory X connection.
Exactly. And of course, once the fight hits the ground, you know he's got phenomenal jiu-jitsu, really good ground and pound too. But on the other side of Brandon Moreno, if you're the guy taking him down, you're kind of doing his job for him, because he's phenomenal at turning other people's mistakes into his advantages.
And I mean, you have to just think back, the Brandon Moreno fight against Askar Askarov, that was an amazing one. I know it counts as, you know, a draw on the records, but holy smokes, that was a lot of fun to watch.
And for Brandon Moreno to out-grapple Askar Askarov for large portions of that fight, you might not know who Askar Askarov is, but for Brandon Moreno to accomplish that is phenomenal too. Now, the few things that worry me for both guys, Brandon Moreno has been known to get tired in fights just because he does so much. Now, he has looked better as of late. I know Formiga was on a bit of a downtick when Moreno beat him, but Moreno beat him soundly throughout all three rounds. It wasn't the most one-sided fight, but I do think Moreno, it was the first fight where you looked at him and you thought, okay, he could be an elite in this division, and not just a guy who you can put in fun matchups on the main card and different cards. So I think this is your fight of the night. I'm very excited, and I'm pretty much split down the middle on who's going to win.
I mean, it should be a really good fight, and if you're Brandon Moreno, A, you're just hopefully not defeated. You're pissed off because you got Alex Perez. Those guys originally scheduled to fight, and now all of a sudden you have Perez up in that main event slot. Moreno drawing the ever dangerous Brandon Royval, a guy coming out of LFA. A lot of people didn't really know who he was. He took on Tim Elliott. I remember, Matt, watching fight tape on Brandon Royval off the LFA scene. And we knew this guy was going to be something special. You knew the scrambles of Tim Elliott were going to be a problem. But holy smokes, he looked amazing in that fight. And then taking on a very well-rounded Kai Kara France, and he's one of those guys, I think his record really precedes him. Brandon Royval went in there. They were throwing wild spinning stuff. They were getting rocked. Brandon Royval ultimately coming out on the winning end. Overall, I think this is a great fight and a really good pick for Fight of the Night. And for me, it's a fight that I was already talking about in the intro. I'm so excited about D-Rod, Daniel Rodriguez, taking on Nicholas Dalby. And Matt, if we're talking about some of the underdog picks that we had this year, I know I might have differed with you, but I had Daniel Rodriguez over Tim Means way back when. And that's not a tire pump on my part. I just want to say, I looked at Daniel Rodriguez's record over the beginning of his career. He's a guy that's trained at the BMF Ranch, getting ready with Stitch Him Up Joe Schilling, free agent. Sign him, maybe. Who knows? Got to try and help him out. But Daniel Rodriguez coming into the UFC, he had a win on Contender Series. They didn't sign him. He went back to the regional scene. They gave him a tune-up fight against a scrub. And then he came in against Tim Means and really showed what he could do. And he's blown the doors off at just about everybody he's faced so far in the UFC. I think this makes for a great matchup against Denmark's Nicholas Dalby, a guy who really didn't look great in his last fight, which was unfortunate. I mean, he has a better tattoo than Ben Affleck with his phoenix on his back. It's more complete. It looks cooler. But for Nicholas Dalby, we knew exactly what he could do. He just kind of had to piece it all together. And Nicholas Dalby, somewhat similar to a guy like Luis Smolka, and unfortunate that Smolka missed weight and was deemed unfit to compete last weekend. But Nicholas Dalby had demons to really try and overcome. He did on the regional scene with Cage Warriors. The wild fight against Ross Houston. And then the other one was against Carlo Pedersoli as well. That fight was crazy if you want to go back and watch that. But the fight against Ross Houston, they had to call the fight because there was just too much blood. You know Nicholas Dalby's going to bring it every single time. Unfortunately, in his last fight, it was Canada's Jesse Ronson that really brought the fight to him and ultimately got the win as a big underdog in that one. So Nicholas Dalby, at 36 years old, trying to overcome that recent loss and really kind of shake the cobwebs. It's going to be tough against Daniel Rodriguez. I mean, we'll get into it more in depth in the pick, but Daniel Rodriguez has sneaky, sneaky wrestling defense. He knows when to get the fight to the ground. He's definitely adept coming out of 10th Planet under tinfoil hat, check it out, maybe, Eddie Bravo, and a guy that's trained and spent a lot of his life in Southern California. So I'm really looking forward to this fight. I mean, you get every single aspect with both of these guys. And for Nicholas Dalby, too, he's no slouch on the ground as well.
Oh, yeah. Again, everyone kind of knows this. I'm a huge Tim Means fan, and I was late to the Daniel Rodriguez party. I really was. Now, were my eyes open? Very much so, because the Tim Means performance, it was one of those fights, and you never know with guys like this, when you have a prospect kind of early on in their UFC career, and they fight kind of a more established name, whether they are at the top of the division or not anymore, Tim Means is a more recognizable name than just your average kind of, you know, run-of-the-mill welterweight. And for Daniel Rodriguez to go over there, outstrike him, outgrapple him, and ultimately submit him, just a really impressive performance. And you know that with Daniel Rodriguez, he has a really high fight IQ. He does throw big, big power in his shots, but he's not a guy who's going to go for the finish when he doesn't think he can. He's a very offensively minded fighter, but he knows when he should kind of pull back on the gas a little bit. Nicholas Dalby, again, what more can he say? He's not involved in boring fights. That might be starting to affect him a little bit in his career. You'll kind of see him take a few more shots than he used to. And he had that draw against Darren Till. The UFC is probably going to mention that in his first run in the UFC. One of the better, it's phenomenal fight. Highly recommend going back and watching it. It shows that classic Nicholas Dalby heart where he could lose the first two rounds 10-8 and you know he's going to come out and try to do the same thing to you in that third. So I do think this is a phenomenal pick for Fight of the Night. I'm extremely excited. It's crazy that this is the first Fight of the Night too.
It's first or second. It's really early to tell and we'll get a better gauge on some of the fights that are coming up. And I mean, if there's fights that drop out during the week or if there's fights added, make sure you keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks as the week progresses on. We got some great content coming up as well. I mean, Early Stoppage with John Franklin, which is one of the great podcasts that we have. We're also working a little bit inside baseball at revamping This Week in MMA. So if you're not subscribed already, if you haven't tossed that like, please consider doing so. It really helps out us here. And I mean, it's crazy to think that at the start of the year, we were just breaking 1,000 subscribers. Now we're up to 17,000. And it is all thanks to you at home, the viewer, Matt. I'm really looking forward to this card. Yeah. There's so many great fights and a lot of fighters that maybe people don't recognize. Again, the Louis Casse, the Sasha Platnikovs, Jordan Wright, you've got Dustin Stolzfus, you've got Jared Gooden making his UFC debut. There's so many new fighters or fighters that you maybe never seen. So hopefully we can kind of help you out while you're doing a little bit of your studying for this card because it's a great one to look forward to. And Matt, without further ado, let's get into the first prelim on the card. And as we always say with Fight Night Picks, let's get into it. really looking forward to our next fight coming up at the welterweight division, Matt. We have a couple of guys making their respective UFC debuts as the monster Luis Cosce is taking on Sasha Platnikov, fighting out of Hong Kong. And I put it there, United States and Hong Kong, just because he's training out of Vegas with Syndicate MMA, Coach John Wood in the corner. Matt, a lot of people might be familiar with Sasha Platnikov. If you follow at all our pals over at South China Morning Post, we got Nick Atkin and we have the man, JHK MMA himself. And he's been featured on Fight Night Picks. So I can say friend of the show. I was actually on their show a couple of weeks ago. They have had a lot of interviews with Sasha Platnikov. There's been a lot of stories with the South China Morning Post written about Sasha Platnikov. And what can I say? First world champion from the country of Hong Kong. And it's really exciting to see a fighter representing Hong Kong. You just don't see it very often. And Sasha Platnikov, for what it's worth, 5-2 total record. You've seen the power. You saw it in his last fight against a short notice opponent. And it was a late change for him in that fight where he's taking on Paulo Henrique, a guy who was a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, who kept his hands incredibly low and showed very, very poor striking defense. Now, Matt, he was originally supposed to be taking on Omar Hussein, a guy that a lot of people might be familiar with from the regional scene with UAE Warriors. Unfortunate that that fight didn't materialize because at the time, Hussein 7-1. And I mean, for Platnikov, he has taken on a recognizable name, and I have to say a very recognizable name. Back at UAE Warriors 8, he took on Munir Lazez. And with full transparency, I've got a lot of different regional names that I have scribbled down on a notepad. Like, hey, you should watch her fights or watch his fights. And I'll throw a couple of them at you right now. Finland's Abdul Hussein. Not Omar Hussein, but Abdul Hussein. His nickname's Abba. He's 7-1. You gotta watch him. Look him up on Tapology. Go watch some of his fights. Just take my word for it, but definitely somebody to watch. Another name is Brazil's, and this is gonna be a really tough one. Jackson Lujejo. He is a guy that you definitely need to watch at 11-1-1. It was unfortunate that his fight a few weeks ago fell out. Jackson Lujejo is definitely one of those guys. My last name that's on my list, and it's a guy that you might have heard of before, but you might really not have, Milos Janicic. And he's a guy that fought at KSW 51, came out on the losing end of the fight that he was in. But I mean, the kid right now, 13-3, still very young, plenty of finish wins on his record, just picked up a submission win a couple of weeks ago. Another name to keep on your radar. All of that to say, Sasha Platnikov is one of those guys, just from paying attention to the South China Morning Post, I've really seen a lot of interviews and tape on this fighter. And it was one of those ones where, scratch the Munir Lazez fight. At the time going into that one, he was 4-1. He was really riding high. He had just picked up a win at AFC 12 against Sung Won Sun. And in that fight, he looked really good. I mean, he took the fight to the ground. He showed really good IQ, staying on top. Ended up getting the win in that one by decision. Now, Matt, the thing for Sasha Platnikov, again, coming out of Syndicate MMA, I think there's some similarities between his game and one of his training partners. And this is a little bit of a stretch, but you can see it from maybe even just the way that he looks. Sean Strickland. And I know if you went on to his Instagrams, he was riding high with Sean Strickland. Big win over Brendan Allen last weekend. But for Sasha Platnikov, nice spinning attacks, crisp boxing, decent head movement. And he throws a lot of straight punches, which is something that you like to see. He's not going out there and headhunting. But the man on the left-hand side, Matt, Luis Cosce, sitting at 7-0, all 7 wins, first-round finishes. What can you tell me about him?
So if you do a really big deep dive on Luis Cosce's record, you're going to be a little bit underwhelmed. And Craig's going to throw some stats at you right now. And
may
again,
I?
Yes, go for it.
Okay, so Luis Cosce, before his last fight, his combined opponent's record was 34-61. And I have to say, the fight that really, maybe got him a little bit of notoriety, we could talk about the Sir Gregory McCowan win. But it was really the fight after that. He was 3-0 going into a fight with Danny McWilliams. And you might say, Danny McWilliams, he's fought some guys I've seen before.
One or two.
Well, he fought the Shabazian brothers and lost to both of them by first round finish. He also fought both of the Cosce brothers in the same month last year of August, and got finished in the first round by both brothers.
And you guys think Paul Felder's cool.
You could say Daniel McWilliams, he's kind of like the buster of the family.
Hey, brother.
But overall, he's losing to all the, hey, brothers.
Oh, 100%. Now, here's the good news. When you do a deep dive on someone's record, and you do see that they fought some underwhelming talent, it does matter how they beat them. The great news for Kosei is he is blowing the doors off all of these kind of lesser-known opponents. And then the Victor Reyna fight going into the Contender Series, Reyna was a guy who you finally thought of as, okay, it's finally a live opponent, to use a boxing term, where Kosei should face some adversity. Kosei went out there and looked kind of like an orthodox Jeff Neal. He threw a lot of good head kicks, a lot of good body kicks. He has deceiving speed, and you had mentioned this before, but I see it a little bit as an advantage. Luis Kosei is going to be one of the smaller welterweights that you see in the UFC. He's not a big guy frame-wise. He is heavily muscled, like he's pretty thick, but he's not a big guy like a Neil Magny or even like a Kamaru Usman. When you think of him, you're like, wow, he's like 6'1 and huge. But no, Kosei's a little bit smaller. He's got more of that Drew Dober body type, but he uses it to his advantage. He's really good at blitzing forwards with big shots. He throws straight punches, he can throw overhands, but the kicking game is something that really opens up his hands. Because you think of him, you go back and watch a lot of his fights, he is very boxing heavy and he is a bit of a headhunter, but that body kick and that head kick that he can throw with that back right power leg is a really nice combo. It just kind of complements the boxing ability of Kosei very nicely. But with Palatnikov, sort of the ultimate kind of just good at everything, jack of all trades, if you will. He can get the fight done on the ground. He has good ground and pound, especially from on top. The submission game isn't really the forefront of his game. He can really, it's more if he beats you up with his ground and pound, the submission could open itself up. Like you had mentioned, though, the spinning attacks in the feet, something you have to watch out for, because he's not a guy who overuses them. I think that people who do spinning attacks a lot of the times, they throw too many of them. Think to Zabit, for instance, or even Edson Barboza. They'll land one or two throughout a fight, and those will be the ones that you remember. But throughout the fight, they'll miss 8, 9, 10 of them, and that just saps a lot of your energy. Wait. I like how Palatnikov only pulls it out when he thinks it's useful.
I mean, when you're a Merab Dvoishvili, and I have to do it, insert the Matt Serra, come on, Merab! But when Merab Dvoishvili gets that spinning elbow knockout over Rafion Stotts to get him into the dance, he just decides, I'm going to take off like a helicopter every fight. And the kid has expendable energy. So, I mean, he's like an Energizer bunny. He could just go for days. But you're right. Sasha Palatnikov only throws it. It tends to be in circumstances where you know he's not going to expend too much energy. And it's something that's available to him. We haven't really seen him get caught by too many shots off of those moves. But I mean, really, you look at it, I mean, you got the guy in the boxing gloves, you know that he's extremely well-rounded. For Luis Kosei, he's one of those guys, and we've seen this recently, especially at 170 pounds in last weekend's co-main event, just like Chaos Williams, he can just go forward, and if he touches you with one of those hands, there's a good chance that you're going down. And in that fight against Reyna, I mean, you saw exactly what he could do. Same thing goes for all of those opponents whose combined record was 34 and 61. Luis Kosei definitely got or has a decent blueprint coming up from that regional scene, getting that win over Reyna to get him over to a UFC fan base. And I would really compare him as well to another fighter that we talked about in our possible fight of the nights with Daniel Rodriguez. The guy fought not the best level of competition coming up through. You thought maybe some of them were scrubbed. Same thing with Chaos Williams. You look at his record, nobody really jumps off the page before he goes in and fights Morono and fights Abdul Razak Al-Hassan, and he just continues to pull through with wins. So for Luis Kosei, he could charge forward. You might worry about him taking on a really crisp striker and somebody with really good counter abilities. I mean, I think of certain fighters like if Luis Kosei, and this would never happen because Kosei is much smaller and a guy at 185, but like Uriah Hall, if you take on a very, very high-level counter striker, you're going to have some problems. But I mean, Luke, that's not until we get a lot higher up in that 170-pound conversation. And with two guys making their UFC debuts, I'm not so sure that we'll see that out of a Palatnikov. Or if Luis Kosei maybe does throw caution to the wind in his debut, do what got him to the dance, and he's going in there for that first-round finish win. Now, Matt, if we have a look at the total odds, Luis Kosei is one of the biggest favorites on this card. He opened a minus 365. He's now trending around a minus 374 over on best fight odds. If we look at Sasha Palatnikov, opened at a plus 275. He's now at a plus 289. And if we have a look at the Tapology votes, and the night's still young here, folks. Out of 360 total votes, 96% are going with the fighter from Lost Boys Jiu-Jitsu and Muay Thai and Luis Kosei. Hey, brother. And 80% are saying that he's going to win by knockout or TKO. Do you think that the odds and the fan votes are justified in this one, Matt? Because personally, I see it as a little bit of a closer fight.
I see it a little bit closer, but again, I'm heavily favoring Luis Kosei in this. Now, here's the one thing that everyone needs to remember. You know who else had nothing but first round finishes. I don't know why that was so hard to say. Shane Carwin. And guess what happened the second he got past the first round? Got real tired. Got Data 5000 tired. I don't think that's going to happen to Kosei. I do think if the power doesn't get him out or isn't able to end the fight in the first round, he should be able to hold up. I do think he can get into that little sort of Paulo Costa-y mindset where if he thinks he has a guy hurt, then let's just rush them and see what we can do. But more often than not, when you have as much power as he does, when you do go for that kill, you're going to at least find one big shot. And I do see it going that way. He might not get it done in the first round, but I do think he'll get a stoppage victory.
I mean, I think a plus 289, there's certainly value on Hong Kong's Sasha Platnikov. Just sounds odd to say that. You don't say it very often. And again, first world champ from Hong Kong. But again, Matt, I mean, Luis Kosei seems to have that kiss of death in the first round. And he's one of those guys that can really rush forward, land with fury. He has decent defense. He has pretty good head movement. And I mean, I think the sky's the limit for Luis and Orion Kosei. So Matt, I'm in agreement. We're both going with Luis Kosei to get the win. Both guys making their UFC debut in this fight and really looking forward to it because that's a division that's certainly wide open. We got some great fights at welterweight on this card that you're not going to want to miss out on as well. So keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, Matt, as we always say.
Let's get into it.
I'm really looking forward to this fight. At 185 pounds, we have Kyle, yes, my brother is Chris Daukaus, taking on Dustin Stoisfus, who's making his UFC debut. If I melt the accent, I took one semester of German in university, I will toot my own horn and I will take it to the bank. Ich heiße Craig Allen. Ich liebe in Canada. And that's about it. And I will milk those accents. A plus, taking it home. But Matt, overall,
modest too.
This fight is great. I mean, Kyle Daukaus, you saw it from his UFC debut. I know his record now is at 9-1, and people may be down on Brendan Allen from his performance against Sean Strickland. But if you go back and watch that fight, Allen Daukaus, holy smokes, it'll blow the doors off of a lot of the middleweight fights that you're going to see because Kyle Daukaus rallied. He put the cap on. He put it upside down. It was ninth inning for the boys. We were getting excited. Rally caps exactly. For the boys. And Kyle Daukaus put on a great performance. And I mean, I look at the scores. Michael Bell scored that third round at 10-9 Daukaus. Sal D'Amato scored at 10-9 Daukaus. Dave Hagen had his head under the table and scored at 10-9 Allen. Matt Allen, I know that there was a possibility that the third round, maybe you scored it a 10-8 for Kyle Daukaus. A lot of people didn't. Maybe you could make the argument. But Kyle Daukaus, what we do know, out of those 9 wins, the guy is a very good jiu-jitsu artist. You see the black belt around his waist on the Instagrams, along with brother Chris Daukaus, who's taken the heavyweight division by storm. But overall, Kyle Daukaus, what a grappler.
He is, and he's phenomenal on the ground. And this is a good way to judge someone by their grappling. It's not like all of his wins are just rear naked choke and guillotines. Kyle Daukaus wins by darce chokes, barbo chokes, anacondas, rear naked choke. Like, he can really beat you in any position on the ground. And that's the fun thing about this fight. We've been spending most of our lives living in this grappler's paradise, and I do think this fight is going to be absolute fireworks. And I'm almost more excited for when it hits the mat, for when it's on the feet, because yes, Dustin Stoisfus, and I'm going to struggle with that name, so I'm just going to call him Dustin. Dustin does have really good kicks, really good punches, and he puts every ounce of his being behind them. And you really appreciate that because, you know, in his mindset, he's not afraid of being taken down. That's where his bread and butter is. With Kyle Daukaus, he is a little bit more volume-centric, if you will. He fights a little bit more similar to his brother, where he's not going to go out there and just try to knock you out with that one big shot. He will kind of play the long-term game. And Kyle Daukaus, a lot of his wins, too, come later on into the fight because he's not afraid to grind on his opponent. And then as they start to fade as the fight moves on, that's when he starts to take over. So, again, I couldn't be more excited for this fight.
And, I mean, for Dustin Stoisfus making his UFC debut, a guy coming in off of Dana White Contender Series this past summer. He got a first-round win over Joseph Pfeiffer in a bit of a non-starter of a fight. It was kind of a disappointment. Pfeiffer breaking his arm. It was gross. It kind of sucked. But, hey, you get your opportunity in the UFC. I mean, he's 13-1, and you look at the wins. He beats Nihad Nasifovich at GMC3. Guy's record was 9-4. Nothing to shake a stick at. But if you go back and watch that fight, Stoisfus really set things up on the feet. He was throwing those nice hooks. He was whipping them with those kicks. And the thing with Dustin Stoisfus, he'll throw the kicks everywhere. It's not like he's just landing a calf kick every time. He'll aim for your knee. He'll aim for your thigh. Because like you said, he's not afraid to get taken down. You know how good of a submission game he has. And he got a third round twister in that one. Pretty darn cool. Wow. Bryce Mitchell, Korean Zombie. Hey, keep it on lock. I know he's, 40 pounds heavier than both of those guys. But still, keep it on lock. But the fight that I really like for Dustin Stoisfus was the fight against Jonas Bilstein. And in that fight, GMC 20, you might recognize Jonas from fighting Alexander Shlemenko and getting finished. and then Frolov and getting finished, and then Stoshfus and getting finished. But hey, Jonas Bilstein is a really good type of litmus test for me to see if, hey, if you beat him, you can probably kick it in one of the bigger promotions. I mean, yeah, it took Stoshfus two more fights to make it here, but he gets a big win there in a fight against a guy that can definitely kickbox. He's throwing those crazy kicks. He's mixing in some combinations. He switched stances very well. He rocked him in that first round. He gets taken down. He's grabbing the guillotine, and then the round ends, and he goes in there and throws a wild right hand that absolutely springboards his opponent in that one. Stoshfus, you know he's great on the feet. You know his jiu-jitsu's certainly there. And you look at his total wins, and I mean, this is a guy, you can't take it from him. He's the We Love MMA middleweight champ. We love MMA.
Yeah.
And he's their middleweight champ. And for Kyle Daukaus, coming out of CFFC with a lot of really big wins, former champ over there on the American regional scene. We've seen fighters like Miranda Granger. You've seen somebody who's on this card in Caitlin Chookagian, as well as, don't call me his brother, but his brother, Chris Daukaus. You've seen a lot of good fighters coming out of CFFC as well. So Stoshfus coming in here, really impressive record again. Like I said, 13-1. You look at the number of wins, and again, for both of these guys, plenty of submissions. So out of 13, 2 by knockout, 5 by submission, 5 by decision, 1 disqualification win. For Daukaus, 8 submission wins to 1 decision. Very, very impressive out of both of these guys. I really, really expect fireworks in this one. And if it's not fireworks on the feet, you're going to get a grappler's paradise. Now, hopefully it's not as one-sided as like Bryce Mitchell, Charles Rosa, which we thought would have been a much more evenly matched fight. But overall, it seems like a great deal of matchmaking here.
And it is, because both guys match up with each other so well at any distance, or really at any setting in which this fight takes place at. Now, on the feet, Dustin does hit harder than Kyle Daukaus, but I do really like the volume and the speed of Kyle Daukaus. And I would say that neither one of these guys are really what you think of when you think of a traditional grappler in MMA with their striking styles. Kyle, a very good boxer in his own right, does go to the body and to the head quite well. He will grapple much more than his brother, though. Whereas Dustin Stoshfus, he does have the kicks where... The one thing that worries me is he switches stances, but he doesn't do something all the time. Like, he'll switch stances, and from the orthodox position, he seems to be a little bit more hittable than he is from the southpaw position. So I don't know if that's just a sense that he has to become a little bit more comfortable with both sides. That'll come with experience, but it's a good sign that he can do a lot of that stuff already. It's just, I would like to see maybe a little bit less of it until he does improve somewhat, but Stoshfus was the guy, too, where on the Contender Series, it was one of those things where you knew that if he just won, that Dana White was going to give him a contract. It was one of those...
It's been that way the whole season in 2020.
Oh, really? And it's been that way for a lot of it. You could tell that the UFC was like, okay, we don't really care how he wins. I know the side of the mark of the show, but he's probably going to get a contract. Of course, winning via, like, Mark Coleman Shogun arm break is pretty gross, but it was good enough to get him in the UFC. I like a lot of things about Dustin Stoshfus. I just don't know if he beats Kyle Daukaus, and for this reason alone, I know Kyle Daukaus can take him down. I don't know if he can take Kyle Daukaus down. And from the top position, yes, Stoshfus is a really good grappler. I don't know if he's going to be able to squirm his way out from underneath a guy like Kyle Daukaus, who isn't just jumping on submissions and you can buck yourself out from underneath him. He's very much more control and then get the submission, and then control and get the submission. So I do think sort of the steady game of Kyle Daukaus will slowly take over as the fight progresses.
I think it's going to be a really, really good fight. So let's have a look at the odds just quickly. Stoshfus opened as a plus 125 underdog. He's now at a plus 205. Kyle Daukaus, one of the biggest movers and shakers in terms of this line, open a minus 150. He's now at a minus 252. If we have a look at the Tapology votes, Matt, and it's still early, at a 438 total vote, 74% going Daukaus, with 64% of the voters going with him to win by decision. Bit of a surprise to me, because again, both of these guys are proven finishers. A lot of people seeing the method of victory for Kyle Daukaus to be by decision. Same thing for Stoshfus. Out of the 26% that went with him, 53% predicting a win by decision. And that's the interesting thing. I think Kyle Daukaus has a method of victory where, not Lamprey, not Jake Shields-esque, but once he gets that fight down to the ground, you're going to have a hard time getting out from under them tangs, as Shannon Sharpe would put it. So overall, I'm really looking forward to this fight. We've talked quite a bit about both of these fighters. I mean, with Kyle Daukaus, steady pressure on the feet, really good volume, really good pressure, and great takedowns as well. For Stoshfus, his takedowns come in different ways. And I mean, they're not as fluid as a guy like Kyle Daukaus.
No, yeah, Stojkovic has a much more traditional jiu-jitsu sense of a takedown where he's more trying to drag his opponent to the ground, and I don't think that's going to work against a guy like Kyle Daukaus because he's the one moving forward, so you're not really going to have a lot of opportunities to get his back up against the cage. And for that reason alone, again, I think it's hard to pick against Kyle Daukaus. Dustin is the harder puncher, and he's the more powerful striker, so of course there's always a chance for him to land a big bomb, and he is... You can tell, naturally, he is a grappler, but he's definitely made huge improvements throughout his striking game, and you can see that throughout his career, but I just don't know if it'll be enough to be Kyle Daukaus.
A guy out of Pennsylvania in Kyle Daukaus, and a guy out of Pennsylvania on the right-hand side in Dustin Stojkovic, who's been training in Germany at Planet Eater MMA. You might recognize Peter Sabata coming out of that gym as well. Matt, this is a really tough one for me, and it's going to take a lot more tape study as the week goes on. I mean, we've watched quite a few fights already, but it's going to take just a little bit more. I'm looking forward to question mark kicks on Saturday. But for the time being, I'm going with Dustin Stojkovic, the big underdog at this point. I mean, again, the line opened, and I wasn't overly surprised. You got Daukaus at minus 150 after a really competitive fight. It might not show on the scorecards against Brendan Allen. Stojkovic coming in at plus 125. I like Stojkovic at a plus 205, and again, I really like his game. He can mix things up on the feet. He can switch stances. He can really mix in a lot of different strikes, and again, you really have to worry about his jiu-jitsu once it touches the mat. I know on MMA Form Guide, they list him as a brown belt. You have Kyle Daukaus as a black belt on the left-hand side, so we'll see what happens in this one, but overall, I'm really looking forward to this fight. Yeah. You've got Kyle Daukaus. Hey, I'm Chris's brother. I've got Dustin Stojkovic in his UFC debut. Overall, it's a great fight, and we've got a really good card headlined by two great fights. Flyweight championships, you got Deiveson Figueiredo defending his belt against Alex Perez, and then you also have Valentina Shevchenko defending hers against Jennifer Maia. So you're going to want to keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, Matt, as we always say. Let's get into it. Really interesting fight. At 170 pounds, we have a guy, and it's been a while since we've seen Brahma, and I'm not talking about The Rock, I'm talking about Alan Jouban taking on the Night Train, and Jason Aldean would be proud. Jared Gooden, in Gooden's UFC debut, Matt, we were really looking forward to Jared Gooden's possible UFC debut this past summer, taking on a really tough out in Dwight Grant, former common opponent of Alan Jouban. Unfortunately, Jared Gooden out of that fight this summer due to injury, so takes a little bit of time off, and now he's taking on Alan Jouban, a guy that we've seen on the desk recently with Karen Bryant and Michael Chiesa for the UFC, a guy who co-hosts on the MMA Heat podcast with Karen Bryant, Alan Jouban. And again, like I said, it's been a while since we've seen Jouban, about a year and a half to be specific. He lost a split decision to Dwight Grant. And I mean, really, Matt, we look at his last five fights. We go all the way back to the Mike Perry fight. That was almost 4 years ago. So he fought Perry, beats him by decision. Loses to Gunnar Nelson by submission. Loses to Nico Price by knockout. Beats Ben Saunders by knockout, which, I mean, a strong gust of wind would knock out Killer B on any given Sunday. But Matt, Alan Jouban, a guy that has 23 pro fights going back to his debut in 2011, versus Jared Gooden, who made his pro debut back in 2015, who has 21 pro fights. Gooden, obviously, the more, active guy as of late. We've seen him take on a decent level of competition on the regional scene. Some names might pop up that you recognize. I know Bruno Oliveira was his last loss, a guy that we saw lose to Ulberg recently on Contender Series. For Alan Jouban, though, I mean, coming up through that RFA schedule into the UFC in 2014, he's definitely taken on some big names that you might recognize, and we had mentioned a few there in the last five. With Alan Jouban, usually when he fights, there's two Alan Joubans you're going to get, and for Jared Gooden, there's only one speed, and I hate to make a Charlie Sheen quote, but go. And the guy just knows exactly what to do. He uses length quite well. He can mix in a lot of good combinations when he keeps it standing, throws a nice calf kick. And the other thing that Gooden does, throws a lot of straight punches down the pipe. He's not one of those guys that's going for the kill right off the initial shot. And he's not one of those guys that's going to run in and throw looping hooks and leave his head exposed. He throws some nice uppercuts too. But the trouble is, he will keep his head up and he will keep it right in plain sight. So I said that. He throws a lot of nice straight shots.
Because he throws big hooks though. And that's the problem with Jared Gooden. He has a lot of power, but he knows he has a lot of power. And when a fighter knows that they can just end the fight with one shot, one of the worst things that can happen, because Jared Gooden, if you watch a lot of his fights, he loads up on his shots. And when he does do that, it gets him in trouble. Because when he is throwing the big uppercut, when he's throwing the big left hook, it leaves his chin wide open. Now, it hasn't cost him all that much as of late. But when you fight a guy like Alan Jouban, yes, he's at, we'll say, I won't say he's chipping onto the 18th hole, but he's definitely like pulling his cart between the 16th and 17th, I'd say. He's near the end of his career.
We're taking drink orders with the drink cart going by.
100%. No. He's still in the game. Let's not get things twisted. Alan Jobin is still a very good fighter, but Jared Gooden has a lot of holes in his game that a guy like Alan Jobin, a wily veteran, can really take advantage of. Now, if Jared Gooden had this skill set, but we saw what a 31-year-old Jared Gooden looks like against a 38-year-old Alan Jobin, then maybe by the time he does get a little bit more experience against higher-level competition, it could flesh out that skill set more. But the fact that he is sort of hittable, and with a guy like Jobin, no, he doesn't have thunderous power by any means, but if you're throwing those big looping shots as you're moving in, Alan Jobin can crack you with a single elbow. Now, Alan Jobin, he overuses his elbows a little bit. He's fallen in love with them to a certain degree where even when he goes for the finish, the Ben Saunders fight is a good example, knocks him out with a punch, which he probably could have landed minutes earlier, but it's just every time he would get Saunders hurt, he'd get him up against the cage and, oh, I gotta throw those big elbows, gotta throw those big elbows. Now, when they land, they're phenomenal. We saw, again, as early as last night, Paul Felder was landing really good elbows in RDA, was able to cut him up a little bit with them, but Alan Jobin isn't going to beat those upper level guys at this point in his career. There was a time after he beat Mike Perry, I think he was even ranked for like a week. It was one of those like, oh, he's 15, and then you check the next day and he's not, before he had fought Gunnar Nelson. And Gunnar Nelson, especially back then, if you lose to him, there's no shame in that. So Jobin at this stage in his career, I like him as one of those gatekeepers to the UFC. He's in sort of my Matt Brown category. He's in the Tim Means category. He's that, well, we know what we're going to get from him. Let's just see what this prospect can do. And if they beat him, it's a great litmus test. And it is a bit of a lose-lose, though, for Jared Gooden. Because let's say he does lose to Alan Jobin. Then, okay, you lost. But if you beat him, it's, well, you beat a guy coming off a year and a half layoff. Like, there's not a lot of shine in this for Jared Gooden. And that's what makes this a very dangerous fight for him. Because stylistically, could he catch Alan Jobin? Yes, he could. Nico Price is able to do it. And Alan Jobin does kind of have this sort of, I'll say, lethargic start to some of his fights where he does like to read his opponent. We saw that in the Dwight Grant fight. He lost by split decision, but no one was the real winner of that fight. I know the fans definitely weren't, because it was two guys who knew how good their opponent was, and they didn't really want to open themselves up for anything. And it just turned into two guys staring at each other.
And I mean, you might not be high on Dwight Grant at home. Watch his fight against Carlo Pedersoli. That guy has hammers for hands.
Dynamite.
Dwight Grant, you'd never think it. But I mean, yeah, you're right. With Alan Jobin, it's almost a picture of consistency, unless he decides, hey, let's stand in a mirror and watch each other fight for a little bit. And that's what we got in that fight against Dwight Grant. For Jared Gooden, you typically get the same thing. A lot of forward pressure, a lot of leg kicks, and he will leave himself open to get hit. I mean, if you go back and watch his very last fight at Titan FC 62, he took on Josh McCown. He took on Trent McCown. And Matt, that fight was fun, but it also sucked.
It did, and it's a little concerning when McCown can land those clean shots on a guy like Jared Gooden.
Over and over and over.
Yeah, and he did have him hurt on multiple times, and nothing against McCown, but he's not the level of striker Alan Jobin is. Now, Jobin's chin is a little bit questionable, so maybe if Jared Gooden can crack him with a big shot, he can hurt him early. But it's really hard to side with a fighter when their best path to victory is they got to jump on their opponent quick and knock them out. If this fight starts to go long, I'm not really in love with the cardio of Jared Gooden. I know Alan Jobin, even in those fights where he does have sort of an elevated output, can stay very consistent throughout 15 rounds. Cardio has never been an issue.
15 rounds.
Or sorry, for 15 minutes throughout 3 rounds. I like how he checks leg kicks too. I do think that's an important thing that not enough high level fighters do. Even there's champions out there who don't check leg kicks. Piotr Jan doesn't check leg kicks. He's still very good.
Habib didn't need to in his last fight.
Yeah, not all fighters do, but you always see Paul Felder's a good example where when you are really good at Muay Thai and that's kind of your main martial art, checking leg kicks, one of Alan Jobin's kind of not signature moves, if you will, but just something that he's always done very well throughout his career. Love the Muay Thai Alan Jobin. I think this will be a very fun fight, but it's just really hard to pick against Jobin. When you look at them skill for skill, Alan Jobin is definitely the more skilled out of these two.
To me, this is one I'm going to stay away from regardless. I mean, okay. I look at the odds here. Alan Jobin, open to minus 145. Early money came in, and this was about last week on Jared Gooden. So Jobin went from minus 145 to minus 107. He's now at a minus 133. If you look at Jared Gooden, open a plus 125, got up to a minus 117. Now he's at a plus 108. So those odds are close. But again, I look at the Tapology picks. It's early, 456 total votes, 57% going Gooden, 66% saying he's going to win by knockout. For the 43% going Jobin, 72% saying he's going to get the win by decision. And again, this is a really difficult one. You look at Jared Gooden, since he lost to Oliveira on a nice 3-fight win streak, you look at his overall body of work too. And I mean, we can talk about those three fights. Second round knockout, first round rear naked, second round guillotine. Before that, he beats Will Santiago, that fought on Contender Series against Kevin Holland. Didn't go all that well. Finished him. Losses to Julian Williams, Dave Vitke, Bruno Oliveira, and Mike Graves. I mean, Matt, overall, a really nice body of work. Plenty of finishes out of the overall, 21, 22 pro wins. 7 by knockout, 7 by submission. He can definitely get it done in a lot of different ways. And you're right. This is a tricky first fight to have. It's not like he's fighting another prospect like we have in a couple of our fights here with Kosei taking on Platnikov. You're taking on a vet that a lot of people know. He's already got that desk gig in Alan Joban. So is this the fight that for 38-year-old Joban, the UFC is like, hey, I'm throwing you a bone. You got to get a win here. That's probably it for Joban. He's been off for a year and a half. 100%. Or is this a fight where Jared Gooden goes in and goes, man, I have something to prove. This guy's on the desk. I got to get a finish over.
Well, I gave away my answer about 3 minutes ago. Alan Joban's going to win this. Yes, Jared Gooden can catch him, but it's always really hard to side with a fighter who their chances, they can catch them. If this stays at range, Alan Joban can check the leg kicks of Jared Gooden defensively, and with his footwork, he should be able to stay away from the looping shots. And if he does decide that when Jared Gooden closes distance, if he wants to crash that space and meet him halfway with an elbow, I think he's more than capable of it. I see this being sort of a long, drawn-out fight. I doubt either guy gets finished early. I think it'll be an entertaining fight, but I don't see the gas tank of Gooden staying up with the gas tank of Joban. I do think that as the fight progresses, the technique and the cardio of Joban will prevail.
It's tough to say that, Matt. It really is. With a guy that's 8 years old or hasn't fought in a year and a half, it's an unknown commodity that you're getting with Alan Joban. Now, hopefully he's like fight ready, commentary ready Paul Felder, and he's coming out here shot out of a cannon. Maybe he was getting ready for a triathlon.
Everyone should.
Overall, I slightly do edge Alan Joban for the reasons that you brought up. Again, if it goes into the clinch, I saw a couple of things with Gooden that I didn't necessarily like when McCowan was able to close distance in his last fight. And I mean, again, Jared Gooden has been quite active. We talked about those fights. You look at his last three. The fight against Stamps a year and a month ago. The fight against Jay Jackson 8 months ago. Not a great record at 3-13. The fight against McCowan was only 3 months ago as well. So he has been very active. Level of competition hasn't quite been there. And again, for Jared Gooden, if he gets a win here, man, kudos to you.
Oh, yeah.
You're really putting a Marcel Stamps on your UFC debut. But overall, I do slightly edge Alan Joban. To me, it's a classic Fight Night Picks pop and popcorn fight. But overall, we both have Alan Joban in this one. Really looking forward to this. We have a great card coming up. 2 flyweight title fights in the main and co-main. So keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, Matt, as we always say.
Let's get into it.
This is straight up the type of fight that gets me out of bed in the morning. We have D-Rod, Daniel Rodriguez, taking on Locomotivo, Nicholas Dalby. A match straight up, I have to say. These are two of my favorite fighters to watch. Nicholas Dalby is an all-action type of guy. You saw that, unfortunately, in his last fight against Canada's Jesse Ronson. But I mean, before that, the fights that he had after leaving the UFC. The Carlo Pedersoli fight is insane. You have to watch it. Then he loses that fight. I mean, he does not win. It's a very good fight. He loses a split decision. He takes on Roberto Allegretti, wins. Philip Malpater wins. Alex Lahore, might know him, wins. Ross Houston, too much blood on the canvas, no contest. Alex Oliveira in the return to the UFC, and he beats him. That was like a crowning achievement type of fight because it was over in Denmark. You had the Danish fighter. It was wild. It was a really close fight. And he wins that one. He's supposed to take on Hot Chocolate Danny Roberts. Fight falls out due to the pandemic that we live in. And then he loses to Ronson. Matt, Nicholas Dalby is an all-action, all-heart type of fighter. He will withstand anything. Can you tell me a little bit more about Nicholas Dalby?
I definitely can. Now, Nicholas Dalby is one of those guys who, the whole time he was outside the UFC, you're just waiting, like, okay, when is Nicholas Dalby going to come back? And I know the Pedersoli loss was kind of bad. Now, personally, I wasn't all that high on Pedersoli, so I was like, I wonder if we'll ever get, you know, the old Nicholas Dalby back. And no, he started stringing off wins, started looking better, and just kind of looking more comfortable in the cage as his career progressed. Now, the Alex Oliveira fight is a very interesting fight because, yes, he did well in some of those moments, but Alex Oliveira, even at that stage in his career, was able to put it on Dalby at a few moments. And Nicholas Dalby is very open to the brawl. You said it perfectly, really. Nicholas Dalby kind of invites that style of fight. And against the Alex Oliveiras of the world, against, you know, the Alex Lahores of the world, you can get away with that. Daniel Rodriguez is a different kind of animal when it comes to those brawling type fights, Because Dana Rodriguez, is he going to wow you with his technique and precision? Not at all. Is he going to wow you with his power, though? Yes, he will. He throws not really a left hook or an overhand left. It's very similar to kind of a Robbie Lawler shovel hook where it's coming at you from an odd angle. But he kind of sneaks it under guards really well. And when he does throw it, he throws every ounce of his shoulder into that punch. Like, if it hits you, you're going down. Now, here's the great news. If you're a really high-level striker, let's say you're, I know we say him a lot, but like Vicente Luque always comes to my mind for really good Muay Thai in this division. You can just duck a lot of those punches, hit him to the body, kick his legs, and you'll probably be okay. But for a guy like Nicholas Dalby, who is very open to that style of fight, who doesn't really have the same power that a Daniel Rodriguez has, because this is the problem with Dalby. He'll have those fights. We all love him because of it. We know he's very, you know, go out on his shield type of a fighter. But with Daniel Rodriguez, you don't want to be fighting that style of a fight. If you do, you want to be the one controlling the dance and leading the action. If Nicholas Dalby can back up Daniel Rodriguez, he might have some success. It's just really concerning that Nicholas Dalby has kind of decided to take this route in fighting. And if Jesse Ronson can hurt you, Daniel Rodriguez can put you to sleep.
Now, Matt, this year for referees and judges has been very strange. I mean, we've seen winners and losers, and maybe some of the guys that got pushed to the wayside. Everybody loved Keith Peterson until that fight that Dominic Cruz had, where apparently he smelled like cigarettes and booze. I wasn't there. Allegations only. Kevin McDonald decided to grow out the fruit salad in the back and sport a Fu Manchu. We don't really see him all that much at UFC events anymore. But if there's a winner out of all of the referees in 2020, it's Chris Tognoni. And Matt, Chris Tognoni really gained his crown as an all-action type of referee, letting him have it. He's like a pro wrestling referee. He's like Mike Chioda. In the fight between Dwight Grant and Daniel Rodriguez, you want to have some fun? You like Fight Night picks? I will allow it. Pause us here and go back and watch Dwight Grant, Daniel Rodriguez. Rodriguez is feeling it. Back and forth, moving really well on the feet, gets caught hot and heavy. And Matt, I was surprised that Chris Tognoni didn't end that fight. Dwight Grant had him dead to rights, but Dan Rodriguez rallied. He put that rally cap on, as we love to see people do. Throw it on, Matt, for the boys. There we go. You look silly, but it's right.
It's all good.
Chris Tognoni let that fight continue, and man, Dan Rodriguez came back. Grant was a little bit tired, but Rodriguez rocked him and really poured it on. Got the finish there at the 2 minute and 24 mark of the first round.
A lot happened in a very short amount of time.
Now, please fix your hat. The weird thing for Daniel Rodriguez was, and again, a lot of people pointed this out, his way up to the UFC didn't really take on the best level of competition. We talked about the Kose brothers. I mean, he lost to Victor Reyna. That's the only loss on Daniel Rodriguez's record. But coming into the UFC, beats Tim Means as an underdog. Then he's supposed to take on Kevin Holland. That fight falls out. He gets Gabe Green, and you might go, Gabe Green. I know we did. Hey, all honesty, we went Gabe Green. Rodriguez is going to cruise through this one. He did not. Gabe Green put on a great performance. So kudos to Gabe Green. So Rodriguez wins that. Then he draws Takashi Sato. And you go, oh, well, that's going to be a really competitive fight. We made a prediction video about it. That fight falls out. Dwight Grant's supposed to be taking on Jared Gooden, who's on this card. That fight falls out. So Rodriguez gets Grant, and we get a banger. Overall, in this fight, I'm excited because Daniel Rodriguez was supposed to be taking on Bam Bam, Brian Barberena. That fight fell out, so we get Nicholas Dalby. So again, we have an all-action type of matchup here, Matt. I'm really looking forward to it. I think that overall, it's a great fight. It's one that everybody can look forward to. I am a little bit surprised by the odds because Daniel Rodriguez opened a minus 230 average on best fight odds. He's now at a minus 343. If we have a look at Nicholas Dalby, he opened the underdog at a plus 195. He's now at a plus 274. And if we look at the Tapology votes, Matt, the night is young. 306 total votes, 88% going Rodriguez, 76% going by knockout. I know that the, you know, recency bias, Nicholas Dalby had that fight against Jesse Ronson, didn't go all that well. But Matt, let's just look at it in a perfect world. Let's say we get 100% Rodriguez, we get 100% Dalby. What do you think we're going to get in terms of a fight in this one?
I'm sorry, we can't look at it that way because we're not getting 100% of Nicholas Dalby at this point, I don't think. I think after that Ronson loss, I'm really down on him, and maybe I'm putting too much into that one performance, but I watched Daniel Rodriguez get caught clean on the chin by Dwight Grant, who, yes, maybe his fights aren't all that
he
exciting.
He hits like a Mack truck. He does.
Exactly. When he does decide to throw, he's extremely explosive. And for Daniel Rodriguez to not only overcome that, but to basically drop Grant with the first punch that he lands after he gets back up to his feet, quite spectacular. And Dalby, this is the type of fight that he can win. And this is going to sound very cliche, but this is one of those Nicholas Dalby fights where no one thinks he's going to win. And he probably gets dropped in the first round. Daniel Rodriguez gets tired. Nicholas Dalby rallies. I just don't see it that way anymore. I think maybe 3 years ago, and if Nicholas Dalby had taken a little bit less damage throughout his career, maybe that's what we would get. But unless Dalby is able to weather that massive storm that comes in that first round and a half, I just don't see it coming for him. So it is going to be hard for me to pick against Daniel Rodriguez. And here's the other thing for Rodriguez. You can knock out Tim Means. You can do it. He's a very good striker, but he can get caught just like anybody. Daniel Rodriguez not only dropped him, he submitted him as well. That's exactly what I was getting to. He submitted him too. So Nicholas Dalby, if he is starting to get beat up on the feet and he goes for a takedown, Daniel Rodriguez has very good defensive submissions. So it's just really hard to pick against Daniel Rodriguez. I wouldn't put any money on this fight just due to the fact that Rodriguez's cardio is a bit of a question mark, but I like Rodriguez in this fight.
Matt, this was my fight of the night. I think this is an awesome fucking fight, and you cannot miss it. Daniel Rodriguez, all action. Nicholas Dalby, crafty. As long as he doesn't get knocked out, crafty. So for Dalby to win, I would kind of point to the Gabe Green fight and the fight that Dalby had against Alex Oliveira. Really implement your total game plan into this one. I know Rodriguez had that standing guillotine against Tim Means, and if you look at him, he can get hit for sure. He does have decent head movement, and he moves great back and forth. He can move side to side quite well. And I mean, hey, if you're training with Joe Schilling all the time, you're going to be tough. But overall, Dalby, if he can really implement his full game plan, there's a path to victory there. But I also like Daniel Rodriguez in this one, Matt. It's an all-action type of fight. You cannot miss this one. And you can't miss a lot of this card. And by a lot of this, you shouldn't miss any. It's a great one. A lot of under-the-radar fights. So make sure you keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, Matt. We're both going Daniel Rodriguez. Two title fights. Main event, co-main event at flyweight. Keep locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say.
Let's get into it.
Really interesting deal of matchmaking is we have La Pantera, Antonina Shevchenko, taking on the Queen of Violence, Ariane Lipsky. Matt, for the Shevchenko sisters, it has to be weird. I mean, if we could somehow get ourselves on a regional promotion and I fought before you and I get brutally knocked out, I bet you're probably going to be flying high with confidence
Craig
got knocked out. But overall,
I can't do any worse.
It's got to be really weird having Antonina Shevchenko, being Valentina, the champ of the division, sure. Your sister's fighting in the same division. And oh, by the way, you're the co-main event. You own the belt. And your sister's fighting the former KSW star, Ariane Lipsky. Matt, for Lipsky, when she came into the UFC, I was really excited because we've seen some great fighters coming out of KSW. We've seen the Karolina Kovalkeviches. We've seen Jan Blachowicz. You're now a light heavyweight champ. So there was a lot of buzz surrounding Lipsky. And they gave her pretty tough tests out of the gate.
They
gave her Joanne Calderwood. She loses that one. She loses to Molly McCann. She beats Isabel de Padua. De Padua coming in on short notice. Isabella de Padua. And then Luana Carolina in that fight, I thought, well, hey, the gal with the dreadlocks, she has a really good game plan. And I was looking forward to that fight for sure. And Ariane Lipsky just went, I don't know, sicko mode, I guess. I mean, it was a crazy performance. It was what we always expected out of Ariane Lipsky in the UFC. And opposite her, for Antonina Shevchenko, she comes into the UFC off a win on Contender Series. She beats Jeon Kim, a tough out. She loses a split decision to Roxanne Modafferi. She beats Lucia Pudzilova, who was oddly fighting down from 35 to 25, and it didn't go well for Pudzilova. And then she loses to Caitlin Chookagian in
a surprising way.
Caitlin Chookagian's maybe one of the best performances I've seen out of Chookagian in the UFC so far. I think it was less to do about Chookagian, even though, again, she was coming off a loss to V. Shevchenko. Then she was taking on A. Shevchenko, and all of a sudden she started taking her down, which was just crazy.
Antonina Shevchenko must have the Nate Diaz thought, like, oh, so you're a wrestler now, because that's what Caitlin Chookagian turned into, and she was just consistently trip takedowns. Here's the weird thing, too. I assumed if Shevchenko was going to win that fight, like a lot of people probably keep it on the feet, she has good Muay Thai, I thought she would at least have a little bit of success on the feet when those two were fighting, but she never really even seemed in the fight against Chookagian, and that's unfortunate to say. And it was weird matchmaking, too, for all intents and purposes, because it's odd that you have, you know, the former title challenger. Yes, she lost to the champ, but I'd argue she did better than most people who fight Valentina Shevchenko. It's not saying much. She still got TKO'd, but then you just make her fight Valentina's sister, sorry. Just very odd by the UFC. I kind of get it if you're trying to set up like a weird sibling rivalry. But anyways, I just didn't think Antonina was ready for that fight. I understand she is the older of the two Shevchenko sisters, so you do have to start giving her those upper echelon fighters at a certain point. But I really doubt she's ever going to fight Valentina. And I don't think Valentina's ever going to lose that belt. So it's just really weird to know where the ceiling of Antonina Shevchenko might end up. Because at worst case, she might just become a number one contender who then, okay, if you can beat Antonina, then you get to fight the final boss, Valentina. So It's a weird position for you to be in the same weight class. Like, I would force Craig to cut down in weight or make him stay heavier, kind of like what DC and Cain Velasquez decided to do. They're like, hey, we're about the same size. You can make 205. I might be able to, but I can't. So we'll see. They didn't even come to that agreement, though. I think Lipsky's takedowns and top control, she can do a lot of what Chookagian was able to do. I understand Chookagian is a very high-level black belt under John Danaher or Enzo Gracie, so she doesn't really get the credit in her grappling that she deserves. If Lipsky is able to get top pressure on Antonina Shevchenko, she's going to really be able to damage her. I like the elbows and the ground and pound from Lipsky on top. And Shevchenko's grappling, it's weird because if you go back to the...
the fight against Roxanne Modafferi.
Thank you. If you go back to the fight against Roxanne Modafferi, she does look really good. And the Lucy Pudilova fight, that's the one that I couldn't remember. The Pudilova fight, her grappling was phenomenal. She was the one going for the takedown. She was really fishing for the submission. So it's weird how, and we do see this from a lot of fighters, she's great in that top position, but once she is taken down and kind of has to be forced into a defensive grappling mindset, it leaves a lot to be desired. So if Antonina can't get up from the bottom against Lipsky, Lipsky's going to go to work all day. She'll be able to land a lot of ground and pound in heavy volume too. If Shevchenko can keep the fight standing, not that Lipsky can't match her on the feet, but I would give Shevchenko a slight advantage.
Huge advantage.
Oh, huge advantage. Fair. I would definitely give her an advantage because Lipsky on the feet, she does do well with her volume, so she can steal rounds that way if you're not kind of paying attention to your own output. But this is a compelling fight, and they are very closely matched up.
And it's kind of a surprise because Antonina Shevchenko at 36 years old, you got Lipsky at 26. And Matt, I mean, I look at it this way. You've got Antonina Shevchenko that has an almost unblemished kickboxing record. She's a Muay Thai champion, kickboxing champ, and Arianny Lipsky, the former KSW flyweight champ, coming in here. You would expect her, if she's going to get the win, she has to employ a complete game, because if Arianny Lipsky comes in and decides that she's Muay Thai ready like Jorge Gurgel, it's not going to go well for her at all.
It's not, but here's the problem with Antonina Shevchenko's kickboxing. It's good. It's not great. It's not like she has an Israel Adesanya background. Like, Antonina Shevchenko can get outstruck in a MMA fight. I don't think she has this, like, wicked striking to the point where, oh, she's like Yair Rodriguez. She has good volume. She doesn't have great power. And that's always a weird thing, especially in the women's flyweight division, because there seems to be a very big imbalance between fighters who have power and fighters who don't. You think of Jessica Andrade, you think of Valentina. Like, when they catch you clean, you're going down. I don't care who you are. With Shevchenko, she's a good striker, but if you're reckless, you can walk through a lot of those strikes because she isn't putting everything behind them. I'm not saying that I think Lipsky's going to decide that, oh, I'm, you know, Bangkok ready. We're going to go out there and try to fight Antonina Shevchenko like I'm Gokhan Saki. But I don't think that this is 100% where, for as long as it's on the ground, Lipsky has to be winning. And as long as it's on the feet, Shevchenko has to be winning. I do think that there's a little bit of give and take in both those scenarios. And again, it's just so hard to pick because both fighters can kind of do a little bit of everything.
And I mean, it was a bit of a surprise too. And you might have seen the graphic pop up on the broadcast. It was about the last 14 women's fights, or in the last 14 women's fights in the UFC, the favorites had won. We had Ashley Yoder cashing as an underdog last weekend. And I mean, that was a fight where back and forth, but Yoder really did dominate. And I mean, in both of the fights on that that card, you had Murata getting a win as well. Bit of a surprise in that that card overall. So I look at this one, Antonina Shevchenko coming in. She opened up -110. They both open -110, pick 'em odds. Shevchenko right now at a -157 on best fight odds. For Lipsky, a +131. And I mean, if you look at the total votes on Tapology, I'll say it the entire time, pretty early, but at a 500 total vote, 71% going Lipsky, 70% picking her to win a decision. So the odds open up par. People are putting the money on Shevchenko, but the fans and the people that are taking the time, those 500 lovely souls over at Tapology that have really put their minds forward, are going Lipsky. Are you going with the popular vote on Tapology, or are you agreeing with the best fight oddsers?
So after how bad my last weekend was, I feel like I need to preface my picks by this. Don't put money on this fight. It's just not worth it. It is really much a, can Antonina keep, or sorry, it is very much a, can, if Antonina can keep it standing, keep it at range, use a lot of her leg kicks, and kind of take some of the explosiveness out of Lipsky, or can Lipsky go out there? Really, this comes down to, do we underrate Caitlin Chookagian's ground game as much as I think people are? Is Antonina actually a decent grappler in her own right? It's just on that night, she was against someone who, yes, very much known for her distance strikes and her, but that night she decided, I'm going to be the grappler because I have such a good background in it. Or does Antonina Shevchenko really have a problem off of her back and with her takedown defense? So because there's that big of a question mark, I find it hard to pick Shevchenko, but I am slightly siding with her to win by decision. I know it's not a popular pick. I know it's not a, you know, we're not bringing anything you probably can't already tell yourself, but it's just Shevchenko. The size, I do think, will play a bit of a part. She's the bigger physically fighter than Ariane Lipsky. So if she is able to use some of that size and strength to her advantage, she'll be able to defend a few takedowns. And then from that point, if she can do that, get Lipsky tired and then start to unload on her own striking. But again, I can't say that I'm overly confident in that pick.
And I mean, it's hard to be confident with either, because for Ariane Lipsky, look at the fight that she had against Isabella De Padua. And man, that was way too close of a fight that you would want to have. De Padua was the much smaller fighter, and she was able to control the grappling for the most part. I know it was a unanimous decision win for Ariane Lipsky, but Antonina Shevchenko, as Corey Anderson would say, well, there's levels to this game. So I look at the fight that she had against Luana Carolina, and it was a tough fight where, who do you really pick in that one? Ariane Lipsky looked great in that one. The knee bar submission was great. I really do think that there's value with Ariane Lipsky, and I mean, I see that the odds are slowly going the way of Shevchenko. Maybe somebody made a mistake and they wanted to go with Valentina and they accidentally clicked on Antonina. But overall, again, Matt, I have Ariane Lipsky. I think this is a very interesting fight. And in terms of seeding in that flyweight division, it really pays dividends for either one of these women to get a win. So, Matt, you're siding with Antonina Shevchenko in this one. I've got Ariane Lipsky. I'm really looking forward to this card because we have the other Shevchenko. We got Valentina Shevchenko defending her belt against Jennifer Maia. We got Davison Figueiredo taking on Alex Perez in the main event. You're going to want to keep it locked in with Fight Name Picks, Matt, as we always say. Let's get into it. I have a feeling that this is probably going to draw a performance bonus for one of these guys. And hey, the guy on the left-hand side, Joaquin Buckley, did he get 200 G's from Dana White? I don't know. But the one thing that I know for sure is that after that viral sensation of a knockout win over Impa Kasanganai, Kanye West decided to drop a track over that knockout. How wild was that? So we have Numancia, Joaquin Buckley picking up an entirely new subsection of fans. And hey, if you're here for that knockout, A, we appreciate you. B, toss a sub and a like. I will ask you for that right off the bat.
See, we like Kanye too.
Overall, I look at this fight and hey, the Beverly Hills Ninja is a nickname that should only be reserved for Chris Farley and Chris Farley only. Rest in peace. But I'm looking at this fight as a 50-50 because both of these guys have huge knockout power. You have Jordan Wright coming in. The only blemish on his record, that no contest against Fluffy Anthony Hernandez, where he did get finished, but Anthony Hernandez, as Stephen A. Smith would say, got popped for the weed.
Can't be doing it.
So Jordan Wright gets a no contest. He goes back to LFA and picks up a big win over Gabriel Checo, a guy that you might recognize who's fought some really good names. Then he comes back in and he has a fight on, you know, notice, I guess, against Ike Villanueva. Now, Ike Villanueva at 265 against Chase Sherman did not look that great. Ike Villanueva at 205, where Jordan Wright, and you can see it with the asterisks, he came in at 200 pounds because, again, short notice and he's a middleweight. Jordan Wright had a great performance in that one. So he picks up a win. I know it was due to a cut, but he was really putting it on Villanueva in that one. For Buckley, we knew him coming into the UFC because he had competed with LFA. He had that revenge game against Jackie Gauche that we had seen him fight him earlier on in his career. It was a makeup. He gets a win there. Comes into the UFC against a guy that fights every single weekend or every other weekend. And Kevin Holland got a big fight coming up against Jack Hermanson, which is crazy because he's a fourth-ranked middleweight. But Joaquin Buckley, in a loss, gave a good account of himself. And it was one of those fights where you go, hey, this is a guy that you definitely have to keep your eye on. He comes in against Impa Kasanganai, and I mean, Matt, it was a fight where what's going to happen? A guy gets a win with a loss. Buckley, 0-2 in the UFC for Impa Kasanganai. He was coming off a big win over Maki Bitolo. There were big things and big, you know, possibilities in that fight. But again, who could have predicted that Kanye West is going to drop a song over your knockout?
Definitely.
How wild is that?
I love Kanye West. Again, I can't stress this enough. I love Kanye West. And not even I thought, you know what? He's just crazy enough to drop a song over this knockout. Great job by Joaquin Buckley. Like, that's the coolest thing you can ever tell anyone for the rest of your life. Joaquin Buckley, I do like what you mentioned about the Kevin Holland fight. We just learned a lot about him in that fight, be it good or bad. We saw how aggressive he is, how good his boxing is. He does have nice boxing. He just throws a little too hard sometimes. I think he's another one of these guys. He realizes the power that he has in his hands. And not that he gets trigger happy with it, but he can get a little overexcited if he does think that he's landing shots. And it'll burn his gas tank out to a certain degree. Joaquin Buckley, he's in that Yoel Romero kind of 50-50 category where is he punching or is he defending? There's not a lot of in-between. It's not like he's a Robert Whittaker who's going to, you know, throw his shots, get out of the way, move out of yours, and then throw his combinations again. He's going to either just throw his combinations and then kind of get his defense up, kind of be smart for a little while, let his battery recharge, and then let his and then kind of go for it again in those short bursts. But Kevin Holland, again, he's one of these guys who I wouldn't consider him being a entry-level UFC fighter. I definitely have him. He's not in the top 15 yet, but Kevin Holland is on his way there, I would say. I don't think that's a controversial opinion. And for him to beat Joaquin Buckley, if you're Buckley, no shame in that. If it was your first fight, it was on short notice, and you lost to a guy who, you know, in a couple months could really be in the top three. So for Buckley, the cardio in that fight, bit of an issue. He did get tired as the fight went on, but that could be two things. That could be A, you're fighting Kevin Holland, and he could hit you from across the cage because he's really good at whipping his shots out there, and that's what he did against Buckley. He did the opposite of what Buckley did. When Buckley throws everything with power, you just throw to hit him, and you just throw to hit him, and you just throw to hit him, and then when the power and the opening does start to come, then Kevin Holland can snap you. And that's exactly what happened. I don't think Jordan Wright can stick to a game plan similar to that, just because he doesn't have sort of the long-range attacks that Kevin Holland has. Kevin Holland's good at keeping people way at the range of his shots and his good front kicks, where Jordan Wright is going to kind of ramp into his shots a little bit. He's going to be the one forcing the action. And that's what makes this fight awesome. These are two guys who refuse to take a single step back, and they're matched up against each other. So I think we're going to get an absolute slobber knocker of a fight that I wouldn't be surprised if it ends in the first round.
I love the comment over on Tapology from Arison, and it says, this feels like a Buckley trap fight. Riding this viral fame against a polished undefeated prospect who will have the height and reach advantage. And it is a tough one to try and figure out. The other thing on Joaquin Buckley, I know you might see it, Valkyrie Fitness, that's what he has on his Instagram. If you go on Tapology, a little bit of time at Murcielago MMA.
He's not training with James Krause.
Two names at a Murcielago MMA that pop off the top of my head. You got Daquan Townsend, UFC run, didn't go all that great. You got Chaos Williams as well. And holy smokes, what a guy to be able to at least spend a little bit of time with. Is it Kalen? Is it Chaos? Is it the Ox fighter? It doesn't matter. Finishing fights. For Jordan Wright again, though, I mean, it was a bit of a question mark him coming into the UFC, having not really fought the same level of competition as a lot of guys that you might see on that Dana White's Contender Series. Now, if I have a look at the prospect coming out of Dynamics MMA, I talked about it. He's got 6 knockout wins, 5 submission wins. He can definitely get it done on the feet. And out of his total of 12 fights, 20 minutes and 34 seconds. And you look at this, I mean, Ike Villanueva, first round. Checo, second round. Wilkerson, first round, first round, first round. Every other fight's in the first round. Spinning back kick win over Edward Darby, who was 0-21 at the time.
Yikes.
That was always the issue with Jordan Wright, was the fact that he didn't really take on great competition. The Villanueva, it is what it is. Again, the Checo win to me really holds a lot of water. So if we have a look at the odds, Matt, not so much a surprise, but I think it's playing a little bit into the hype. Buckley opened a minus 182 on best fight odds. That's an average. He's now at a minus 270. For Jordan Wright, opened a plus 151. He's now at a plus 216. If we have a look at the Tapology votes, Matt, at a 452, wow. And it's early. 70% going Buckley, 81% saying he's going to get the win by knockout. For that 30% that are going Wright, 62% saying he's going to get the win by knockout, 10% saying he's going to get the win by submission. This is a very tough fight to try and predict. Nah, 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 do I believe that we'll get a decision.
Nah, nah, nah.
But it's a tough one. What are you thinking here?
So, if Joaquin Buckley had only beaten Impa Kasanganai by third round knockout, be it overhand right, be it left hook, whatever, I'd say the odds would be right now, he'd be, I don't know, minus 185 about where they open. The fact that it was such a viral knockout, I'm sure has kind of put, I always call this the Conor McGregor effect. Conor was basically even odds against Khabib when they had fought. Should he have been? No. He probably should have been like a 2-1 underdog. And that's where the odds had opened. It's just when you have such notoriety attached to your name. And I'm not really comparing Joaquin Buckley to Conor McGregor, but just in the fact that he had that viral moment. He's a name that has definitely been out there as of late for the UFC. That's why they rebooked him so fast, because, you know, Joaquin Buckley's name's been in so many headlines. I think he is going to get this win. I was impressed with him up until that Mortal Kombat fatality that he hit. He was landing good shots in the feet. He was backing him up against the cage. And Kasanganai has very good cage presence, to where he's always the one kind of doing that to his opponent. He's the one going forward. He's the one implementing his physicality. And for Joaquin Buckley to be able to do that before, of course, he got that such a highlight reel knockout, I thought it was really impressive. So I think you really have to focus on the performance against Kasanganai more than just the finish. And the performance itself was quite impressive. So I'm going to pick Joaquin Buckley. It's hard to tell what his ceiling is going to be moving forward, but in this fight, I do like him.
And that's a tough thing. And I mean, I'm sure there's going to be commenters out there. And if you're picking right, I'm not going to call you a hipster, because this is a lot more of a difficult fight to call than a guy who's a minus 270 favorite to a guy who's a plus 216. So if you're picking right, I definitely understand it. There's going to be a lot of people out there that are going to say, hey, you're only picking Buckley because of the hype. But I do agree with what you were saying. I really like the performance that Buckley was putting on against Kasanganai, because he was countering what Kasanganai normally brings into the fight. You saw him implement a good game plan against Sugarfoot Adams on Contender Series for Kasanganai. You saw him have a decent fight against Maki Pitolo. And against Buckley, Buckley didn't let any of that happen. For Jordan Wright, if he crashes forward, maybe there is an opportunity for him. But he could get countered by southpaw and Buckley. I really like Joaquin Buckley in this fight, and I'm really looking forward to this one. So, Matt, we both have Joaquin Buckley in this fight. You're going to want to keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, because we have a great card coming up, headlined by two title fights at flyweight. You got Shevchenko Maia, you got Figueiredo Perez. So keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, Matt, as we always say. Let's get into it. At the top of this card, you have two great flyweight title fights. You have Valentina Shevchenko taking on Jennifer Maia. You have Davison Figueiredo take on Alex Perez. And Matt, if you're Brandon Moreno, you got to be f***ing pissed off about that. Because Brandon Moreno, the assassin baby guy, I've been on many MMA shows. Many, because it's not been a ton, but many. And I've been saying by the end of 2020, the assassin baby Brandon Moreno is going to be your flyweight champion of this world. And unfortunately for my sweet, sweet Brandon Moreno, that opportunity got stolen by Mick Maynard and Sean Shelby. Okay. And listen, not to say that Alex Perez didn't deserve the shot, but Brandon Moreno had some pretty quality wins. And oh, by the way, at the time was ranked higher in the division.
Okay, so when Craig gets me onto a fighter, I fully admit it. Like Piotr Jan, Craig was way early on him, way more early on him than I was. Brandon Moreno was your boy's favorite fighter for years. And then all of a sudden, Craig was like, hey, this Brandon Moreno guy, he's actually pretty fun to watch. And I'm like, yeah, sort of insane. Now, does Craig do more podcasts and is he more famous than me? Yes, he is. But I've been on this Brandon Moreno train for a while, and I do really like the development of his skills, because we have seen him improve as he's fought in the UFC. A lot of people remember his first UFC fight was on short notice against a ranked Louis Smolka at the time. And he not only beat him, he finished him by submission. And yes, you could beat Louis Smolka. I'm not going to deny that. But to beat him by submission, and you know how good of a grappler he is, it's a really impressive way to make your UFC debut.
It's almost like when Brandon Royval came in on short notice and took on Tim Elliott, submitted him. So pretty impressive debuts. And for Brandon Moreno, he's not the type of guy to go sit in a corner and cry and whine about his opportunities. Because you saw him leave the UFC, go to LFA and take a fight, get a win and come back into the UFC. So you know he's battle-tested. He's a guy that has, I mean, you look at it. He's got over 20 pro fights. He's only 26 years old. And he continues to add wrinkles into his game that make it difficult for his opponents to try and figure him out.
And I do think that's a great point. He is a very, for lack of a better term, confusing fighter, just because he can fight you at any range. If the fight's on the ground, he has phenomenal submissions. I highly recommend, yes, he loses the fight, but go back and watch that first round of the Sergio Pettis main event that they were both involved in, because Brandon Moreno showed off phenomenal grappling in that. He had the body triangle, which I do think is his best position. If Brandon Moreno is able to get the back of Brandon Royval, and Brandon Royval is a phenomenal grappler, he's not going anywhere. Brandon Moreno, we do see it a lot nowadays, not with Moreno, he's one of the few exceptions who doesn't, but people who get on the back, they're able to kind of get too high on it and get themselves bucked off, where Brandon Moreno has a really good awareness of where his body is at all times. He's really good at getting that triangle on, puts it on either side, and he's great at making adjustments on the ground. Now, Askar Askarov, another guy who Craig was very hyped about before I was, yes, that fight ended up being a draw. I truly believe Brandon Moreno won that fight. Askarov had his moments. He looked good, and it was a phenomenal UFC debut. Brandon Moreno out-grappled him, though. And for you to go out there and out-grapple Askar Askarov is extremely impressive. And not just out-grapple him. He had him in a lot of danger, especially threatened with those chokes on the back. So the fact that I've seen him out-grapple really high-level grapplers gives me a lot of confidence. But Brandon Royval fights very identical to one of the top contenders at 155. That man's Charles Oliveira. And no, he doesn't really have, this is going to say, I'm definitely going to get made fun of for this. When Charles Oliveira fights, it's a very beautiful thing to watch. You know, he's very flashy. It's not all brute strength and everything. It's this, like, really nice technique. And on the ground, his jiu-jitsu, it's not brute force.
You know how Bruce Lee said, flow, like water? That's how Charles Oliveira fights.
Exactly. And Brandon Royval, kind of a smaller version. Now, yes, he is a little bit more reckless, and he will run in because he has good power for the 125-pound division. And just a bit of a side note, 125 might not even barely have 15 fighters. They are 15 very exciting fighters, though. Like, everyone right now in the division, I would say, is in that kind of elite category. Like, Brandon Royval, even if he loses this fight, if he gets three more wins, I would still like to see him fight Deviston Figueiredo, and same vice versa for Moreno. Let's say he loses this, goes back, gets a few nice wins, shows he's reinvented himself. I do think it is not a fast track back to the title if you do lose, but I do think that a loss for either one of these guys at this stage in the career isn't the end of the world, and I do think that they both grow a lot from it. I know Brandon Moreno's on his second chance in the UFC, but again, we've seen, especially in his second run back, the improvements that he's been able to make. His striking the first go was not good. He was very, I just throw punches to get into the clinch and I'll try to take you down. But as we've seen in this last outing, like, he outstruck Jussie Formiga for a lot of their fight. He outstruck Askar Askarov prior to their fight. And these are high-level guys. So I do think Brandon Moreno's been able to show a lot of advancements. The question really comes down to, if the fight hits the mat, can he deal with the black belt of Brandon Royval? And can his style sort of confuse Brandon Royval on the mat? Or can Brandon Royval go out there, land those elbows, land those straight shots, keep this a kickboxing fight where, yes, Moreno's made advances in his striking, but I still don't think he's on the same level as Brandon Royval.
And I mean, for Brandon Royval, you look at his losses. Ben Von Bauer, lost by decision. Ricky Palacios, lost by decision. Nick Urso, same thing. And then against Casey Kenney, you're losing by decision. But I mean, you've seen what Casey Kenney can do. Good. You saw that Nathaniel Wood fight. For Brandon Royval, though, I mean, you look at the win that he had against Tim Elliott in the debut, and that was such a good fight. And he was coming in on such a nice win streak. You look at the fight against Joby Sanchez, a guy that was at one point in the UFC. The win over Nate Williams. And then again, going in there against Tim Elliott, having been matched up against Jared Scoggins, supposed to happen the end of last year. Of course, it didn't. But he gets that fight against Tim Elliott and looks great. And then he comes in and takes on Kai Kara France in a fight where, hey, it's style versus style, and you're going to get a clash of them. And you had Brandon Royval just proving the doubters wrong in the fact that Kai Kara France was going to have the much better advantage on the feet. Royval coming out of Factory X Muay Thai, let's just keep those hands nice and high. Let's just throw that nice hook there from the southpaw stance and just hammer away at it. And Brandon Royval looked amazing in that fight. You got both guys rocked. You got Royval ending up getting the win by guillotine in the second round. And again, Brandon Moreno is the type of guy that can really mess up the game plan of a lot of different fighters. Brandon Royval, though, seems to be the fighter that just, if a game plan is, I'm going takedown heavy, he can abandon that. And he doesn't have to stick to just one thing or another.
100%. And when it comes to grit, these two fighters have it in droves. Because Brandon Moreno, we've seen him in bad positions and come back. We've seen the same thing from Royval. The Kai Kara France fight, He dropped Royval with the first punch that he threw, and then Royval dropped him with a spinning elbow 5 seconds later. So both these guys will invite the brawl. It's a very fan-friendly style. It's a very hard fight to pick just because on the feet, could Moreno out-volume Brandon Royval? Of course he could. Could Royval outpower Moreno and really make him pay for those longer exchanges? Of course he could. And on the mat, there's just so many questions because so guys are at such a high level in the grappling department that it's a hard, hard pick. And I've been going back and forth all week.
I have to say one more thing on this fight, too, because Brandon Royval is one of the bigger guys you're going to see at flyweight. Really big frame. You see it there, 5'9", 68 inches of reach. Brandon Moreno, the Assassin Baby, is no small guy for the flyweight division. I mean, a couple inches in height. He's got a couple inches in reach. So very evenly matched. This is a great fight. Again, it's a shame that we didn't get Deviston Figueiredo and Brandon Moreno. It's also a shame that we didn't get Alex Perez and Brandon Moreno.
And but here, 255?
Here we are in a fight that, Matt, you had as your fight of the
night. Without
a
doubt.
I'm very excited for this. Let's just, before we get into the nitty-gritty, the odds on this one. Brandon Royval opened a plus 176 average underdog on best fight odds. He's now at a plus 153. For Brandon Moreno, opened up a minus 213. He's now at a minus 184. And if we have a look at the Tapology votes, Matt, out of 479 votes, 59% Moreno, 83% had him to win by decision. What are you thinking on this one?
I was choosing Moreno all week. I was choosing Moreno all day up until about half an hour ago. And then I started really thinking it, and I thought, okay, if the fight's on the feet for 15 minutes, who's going to win? Brandon Royval. If the fight's on the ground for 15 minutes, who's going to win? Maybe Brandon Moreno? And it comes down to the wrestling, in which neither guy really has exceptional wrestling. They're two very good strikers. They're two very good grapplers as well. But I would say the wrestling for both guys, kind of their weak point. I would give the edge to Brandon Moreno. I think he does have slightly better wrestling because we know when he crashes forward with some of those combos, he can loop that into a really nice double leg. So I'll give the slight wrestling advantage to Moreno. But I do think that for Brandon Royval on the feet, the power advantage that he has and really just the striking advantage is going to give Moreno a lot of problems. Or Moreno, goodness, a lot of Brandons. I do think Brandon Royval, though, on the feet, his advantage is quite sizable, and he should be able to get this done.
Matt, Brandon will win this fight. That much is true, and hopefully it doesn't fall out. So, knock wood, I just jinxed it. But overall, I mean, for fight of the night, like, I have Daniel Rodriguez, Nicholas Dalby. I wouldn't slate anybody for picking this one as fight of the night, and I wouldn't be upset if you're taking Moreno or Royval. It's a tough one. Again, I said future champ Brandon Moreno by the end of 2020. It's probably not going to happen now. And I give a slight edge to Brandon Royval on this one, Matt. Because, again, we look at methods of victory. Brandon Moreno is so slippery. I think his wrestling is actually quite a bit better than you might have given him credit for. And, again, you're a big Moreno guy. I think his wrestling is quite good. He definitely has finishing abilities. And he has great scrambles. Brandon Royval's fought a fighter who's similar but on a decline in Tim Elliott. And he looked amazing in that one. He's fought a good striker in Kai Kara-France that has brought a diverse skill set. I think he holds just slight advantages in certain positions. I like his jiu-jitsu a little bit more, and I really like the power advantage on the feet. I'm going to side with you in the underdog here in Brandon Royval, and I'm going to look to that line as it moves on during the week. You're not going to want to miss question mark kicks A on Saturday, because we'll give a little bit more of a preview on this one. We'll have some more talking points as well. That comment section fills up like a mask.
It does.
So make sure you head into that. Check out question mark kicks on Saturday. We both have Brandon Royval in this one to get the win in the underdog. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, Matt, as we always say.
Let's get into it.
Straight up, this is a rematch that nobody asked for.
No one.
Unless you're Paul Craig, I guess. Matt, we have... I gotta say it with full transparency. The reason why we got into MMA was for George St. Pierre, Lyoto Machida, and Shogun Hua. Yeah. So let that be known right now. We have Shogun Hua taking on Paul the Bear Jew Craig. And Matt, if it weren't for that nickname, Paul Craig's UFC career has been something.
Less than memorable, I'd say. It's really weird, too, because Paul Craig's a guy who, it seems like there is always a bit of hype around his fights, but no one really seems to know why. Now, that sounds a lot more disrespectful than I mean for it to, but Paul Craig, he's a good grappler. He has less than impressive striking, I'd say. He's very well known for pulling guard, though. And I was asking Craig what he thinks the average amount of times Paul Craig's going to pull guard in this fight's going to be. The over-under, I'm going to set it at 5.5. You can throw it in the comments.
I was going to say 4.5.
Fair enough. So Shogun, really, if he doesn't go into Paul Craig's guard, I do like his chances. And I know I'm getting, you know, kind of prediction-y early, but this fight's very strange because it's one of the few fights where, yes, I've seen these two fight before, but I do think this fight could be completely different. I don't really think we learned that much from the first fight. Because what do I think is going to happen in this? Well, Shogun's chin's not great anymore, and he has... This is going to be controversial. He's got Thiago Santos' black belt. I've seen Shogun Hua dominated on the ground too many times for me to keep on saying that he is a viable submission threat off of his back. Joe Rogan always used to say, oh, he's a black belt. You got to watch out for him.
One submission win his whole career.
There's a difference between being a black belt and being a true, legit, like, world-class black belt. Yes, a lot of MMA fighters have black belts. They don't use it, though. Like, Tyron Woodley's a black belt, and so is Gilbert Burns. That tells you all you really need to know. Like, there's kind of levels to this, like you had alluded to with Corey Anderson in an early episode. And for Shogun, I just don't really see his jiu-jitsu at being on the level of a Paul Craig. So even though Paul Craig probably isn't as credentialed as a grappler, his MMA grappling is far superior. We saw that in the first round of their fight. And that's one of the few things I think we can take from it. Paul Craig, when he's on top, he can do well. But that's really all we took from it.
And I mean, for Paul Craig, you look at it, former Bama light heavyweight champ, former Fight Star light heavyweight champ, has a win over Magomed Ankalaev. I mean, how crazy is that? And you look at his last five fights, and I mean, I gave him a little bit of a slight at the start, so here's the good. He has that weird win over Kendi Inzechuku. That was a good one. Lost to Alonzo Menafield. That was the sloppiest fight I've ever seen.
Bad.
He threw the bad spinning attack. He had Menafield crashing forward. He finishes Craig. Then he has a win over Vinicius Mojea, no longer in the UFC, the draw against Shogun. And then he gets a win over Gadshimirat Antigulov in the most labored performance I've seen out of Gadshimirat Antigulov, which is easy to say because that's every performance by Russia's Gadshimirat Antigulov. So in this fight, I look at Shogun. His last seven fights absolutely amaze me. But let's go last five. He beat John Volante, the body punch. He has a loss to Anthony Smith where he cried. Then he beats Tyson Pedro, where Tyson Pedro wonky knee after he was winning the fight. Then he loses the fight and gets finished. Then the draw. And then he has a split decision win over Little Nog. And Matt, that was a fight that I didn't need to see. It made me feel sad inside because, again, those are guys that when we get into MMA, like, they were at their peak powers. And it was just a shame to see that because that fight was underwhelming. For Shogun Hua, you look at the overall body of work, you look at the Pride wins, you look at the UFC light heavyweight championship run, and it's amazing. And it's crazy that he's still doing it at 38 years old. But there is not a lot of tread left on the tire, and we're about to hydroplane in a lot of rain.
Yeah, okay. I know we normally give some pretty in-depth breakdowns on this channel, or I'd like to think that we do. I don't even know if we need one for this. Shogun's chin is worrying beyond belief, and that fight against Nogueira was not good on his part either, because Shogun, the one thing about his game, even as he got older, was Muay Thai is still quite good. If he does hit you, if he can string together combos, he can still have success in an MMA fight.
You saw it in the Tyson Pedro fight. It was a perfect example.
Exactly. He had hurt Pedro, and that was a really back and forth fight too, and that was something we hadn't seen from Shogun in a while. Him actually take damage, accept it, and then move forward and kind of do his own thing. So for Shogun, the key is he can't get clipped early. It's been an issue. The Anthony Smith fight's a good example. He gets hit, and then he's just never really in the fight from that moment on. Paul Craig, he's not a dangerous puncher or really, I wouldn't say a serious striking threat by any means, but he has good power. And anyone who weighs 205 pounds, well, anyone who weighed 205 pounds yesterday and rehydrated to an unknown amount definitely has more than enough power to pretty much knock anybody out. Paul Craig's punches aren't the fastest you're ever going to see, but if he lands, I do think he can hurt Shogun. Shogun's leg kicks are going to give Paul Craig problems throughout this fight. But when I ask myself, okay, who could make the improvements from their first fight and really improve upon that? Well, it's Paul Craig. I don't see Shogun making any drastic changes to his game. I don't see him getting better with age. He is not wine. If anything, he is fruit left in the sun. I think Paul Craig's got this one.
Man, I didn't like that. That was rude.
I know, now, and I feel bad saying it.
I want to say something. We look back at their first fight. It was a draw. I don't know if we let that one out of the bag, but it was a draw. Guillerme Bravo scored the first round a 10-8, which was the reason why it ended up as a draw, because you had it split one judge 29-28 Hua, one judge 29-28 for Paul Craig. Everybody scored the first round for Paul Craig, and yeah, he definitely won that round. It's just whether or not you had it a 10-8 or a 10-9. The funky part about it is if you go on MMA decisions, out of the total amount of people that scored that fight, two of them, friend of the show, Drake Riggs, is one of the two, scored it for Paul Craig. An overwhelming majority scored that fight at 29-28 for Shogun, winning the last two rounds. So it all depends on how he scored the first one. If we look at the Tapology picks, Matt, out of 514 total votes, 75% going with Paul Craig, 43% saying by decision, 40% saying by submission. If we look at the total odds, Matt, Paul Craig opened a minus 182 favorite average on best fight odds. He's now at a minus 172. Slight amount of money coming in on Shogun Hua. Opened a plus 151. He's now at a plus 142. You tipped your hand. I'm also going the same way. I'm going with Scotland's Paul Craig.
Breaks my heart, though.
It does. Yeah, it's tough. I mean, you're in this game. You try and look at it analytically. In this fight, again, we tipped our hand. We get into MMA for the guy on the left-hand side. Big Shogun, guys. It's tough, though. You have to look at it for the parts and pieces. Paul Craig in his last fight came out, got a win over Gadshimrat Antigulov, whose cardio is not great, but he's a finisher, and you have to be careful. He also dove into Paul Craig's guard, which you know Paul Craig is going to pull guard all the time. Shogun Hua has a lot higher fight IQ, but in his last fight against Little Nog, it was tough because his cardio abandoned him. Paul Craig isn't a cardio king, but I like the staying power. We saw it in his fight against Magomed Ankalaev, what he can do incredibly late. So I will side with you on Paul Craig, Matt. We're both going Craig. Craig's going Craig. And I'm looking forward to this card, Matt. We've got some really good fights. This one, a hint of nostalgia and also a hint of rematch. So things are going to happen. Two great flyweight title fights near the top. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, Matt, as we always say.
Let's get into it.
Really interesting fight. Closer to the top of the women's flyweight division, we have the former strawweight queen, Cynthia Calvillo. And I say queen because she was really on her way, making moves and starting grooves before they knew we were gone, to quote the Otara Millionaires Club. But she makes the move up to flyweight, takes on the number one contender in Jessica Ai, and pushes a damn pace. And she looked amazing in that fight. She really did look great. And I mean, who would have thought that you come into your own up a weight class, you don't have to worry about missing weight, you're 33 years old to this point, and you finally put a stamp on a division. It was really the move that we expected Cynthia Calvillo to make. And I remember back when she was competing at strawweight, she was always taking on really good competition. If we look at her last five, former champ Carla Sparza loses the decision. Pollyanna Battaglio gets a win. Courtney Casey win. Decision, majority decision against Marina Rodriguez, and then the fight against Jessica Ai. middling strawweights, never really the upper echelon, but we always saw the move. She was at Team Alpha Male. She had some problems with the substances and the USADAs of the world, but really figured it out, made the move to AKA. I know her graphic's going to pop up. She's training at Extreme Couture, spending some time in Vegas getting ready for this fight. But overall, Cynthia Calvillo, part and parcel, great wrestling, really good forward pressure, and really, really good volume. And opposite her, Caitlin Chookagian, she did not look good in the fight against Valentina Shevchenko.
Straight up bad.
She looked amazing in the fight against Antonina Shevchenko. And I know, again, we pop it up on the graphics there. She spent time at Longo Weidman, as they may call it, or Longo Sarah. She spent time with John Donaher. She spent time at Nick Cantone's MMA with Mark Henry. But that fight against Antonina Shevchenko, it was like, hey, you know the the Caitlin Chookagian, where I'm just going to throw volume. She did the total opposite. She was taking Shevchenko down. She got into mount. She really forced her way in that fight. And it's unfortunate that in her last fight, she got Jessica Andrade and got hit by a body shot and ran away to the other side of the cage.
It's wild how much your opinion can change of a fighter based on one performance. And it's weird, too, because Caitlin Chookagian, I think I've said that about her last three fights. Going into the Valentina fight, I thought, okay, she's not going to beat Valentina, but maybe she can have a little bit of success on the outside. Caitlin Chookagian, good at not getting hit. I don't mean that in a positive aspect all the time, though. If you watch a Caitlin Chookagian fight, her numbers are through the roof. She throws at an almost unprecedented rate, and when you watch her, she is always just pop, pop, pop. There's a crazy amount of output in her fights. She doesn't always land, though. They might consider landed strikes. There's a lot of landing on the hands, though, and that's the weird thing about Chookagian's game. It's not that she's hacked the judges, but she's kind of figured out that, okay, if I just throw a lot, and even if I'm not landing clean to the body or landing clean to the head, just my volume can start to win rounds. I know I've started to talk about this a little bit more, and a lot of this is because of Caitlin Chookagian. You can go back and watch some of her fights, and you thought, well, you could have given that to her opponent. But then when you really think about it, you're like, okay, well, who is the more aggressive and who is throwing more shots? Well, Caitlin Chookagian almost always answers that question. In the Antonina fight, we did see a different approach. She took a much more grappling-heavy game plan. Now, you have to assume she decided to do that because of the Muay Thai background of Shevchenko, but I didn't expect her to look that good on the ground. Now, maybe that's speaking to, you know, maybe Antonina's not phenomenal on the ground, but still, I thought she more than dominated that fight. It was a really impressive performance. If Caitlin Chookagian 2 weeks ago didn't lose to Jessica Andrade, I would have a very easy time picking her in this fight. I would. I know Cynthia Calvillo looked good against Jessica Ai, but the problem is Jessica is a very stationary target. You can land shots on her, and her boxing is, it's not crazy predictable, but if you are a decent striker, you can land shots on her. Caitlin Chookagian never has her feet planted at any moment of the fight. She's always whipping out those, they're kind of probing attacks, because you know that she's not throwing them to really get a lot of damage off, but when she is whipping the jab out, whipping those front kicks, staying on her bike, she's very frustrating to deal with, and she can force you to run into shots. Now, I am curious to see if Caitlin Chookagian can actually have a fight where she implements both game plans, where we don't just see the wrestling from her and we don't just see the striking from her. If she can go out in this fight and start, you know, landing good combinations, keeping Calvillo chasing her, and then maybe go for a takedown of her own just to keep Calvillo, you know, keep her thinking, I'd be like, well, great. That sounds like the Caitlin Chookagian who is going to fight Valentina Shevchenko. But then Jessica Andrade showed up to the 125-pound division and said, all right, guys, this is fun and all. I used to fight at 135, pretty good at 115, former champ. Let's try this out. It turns out Jessica Andrade, pretty good 125-pounder. Finished Caitlin Chookagian in the first round. I don't think we can take a lot from that performance. I really don't. I know a lot of people are going to put a lot of stock into it. The difference between a body shot and a headshot is if Caitlin Chookagian got, like, remember when Jessica Andrade knocked out Karolina Kovalkiewicz and just sent her to the shadow realm? You shouldn't fight 2 weeks after you get hit by something like that. With a body shot, it's not positive. Your organs don't like getting bruised, but it won't have the long-term lasting effects that I think a lot of people will. So I think we are going to get a fairly good version of Chookagian in this. I don't think it's just her trying to get a quick turnaround, trying to get that bad taste of the loss out of her mouth. I think we're going to get a very game fighter to both these two. I like a lot from the underdog, but Cynthia Calvillo's grappling is absolutely phenomenal, and she's really been able to prove that in every one of her UFC fights.
And the thing that I like out of Cynthia Calvillo and that I like out of Caitlin Chookagian, not afraid to train at some different gyms.
True.
So for Cynthia Calvillo, you have the wrestling, the Team Alpha Male background. You know you're going to get the Darren the Damage Elkins. You're going to get the Chad Mendezes of the world. You can gain from that. You move to AKA. You move from AKA. And I mean, there's great grapplers there too, but also very adept strikers. You're going to spend a little bit of time at Extreme Couture. And we always pick one particular fighter out of Extreme Couture that's very well-rounded. To me, Dan Ige, but also Justin Jane's there as well. a lot of people that Cynthia Calvillo can learn from and gain from in her martial arts journey, especially moving up to 125. The thing about Caitlin Chookagian, two people that she's trained with, and one person I know she's trained with quite a bit, and you can see it from the Instagrams, Sajara Eubanks. Sajara Eubanks is somebody that you can use to emulate a game plan like Cynthia Calvillo. The one issue I have, Caitlin Chookagian's results in the UFC, Sajara Eubanks' results in the UFC, and another fighter that's fought in the New Jersey, New York area, or trained there, Claudia Gadelha. Yikes. Not that
but
great.
But also Frankie Edgar, Marlon Moraes, Chris Weidman. Like,
Lance Palmer.
There's success stories, too. It's not just, like, fighters from that era.
And I mean, hey, Sajara Eubanks almost made it to the top of the heap at 125 until the weight cut didn't work out all that great. Chookagian had a title fight, and for Claudia Gadelha at one point, former title challenger as well. So, overall, really good fight. Again, for Cynthia Calvillo, you have to really just be upset with the fact that you didn't get the number one ranking after beating the number one fighter. However,
Andrade.
It's a really weird division because, again, you're right. You have Jennifer Maia challenging at the top of this card. You also have Andrade that's probably the next likely title challenger. So for Calvillo, you're 1 to 2 wins away, probably 2 to 3 wins away from a title shot. It's difficult. It's probably two. But overall, I look at this fight. You have Cynthia Calvillo open a minus 155 favorite. She's now a minus 215. For Caitlin Chookagian, open a plus 135. She's now at a plus 175. If we look at the Tapology votes, Matt, 422 of them, 76% going Calvillo, 88% predicting her to get the win by decision. I also agree with the odds makers and the Tapology voters. Cynthia Calvillo put on a great game plan against a fighter that's somewhat similar to Jessica Ai. In Caitlin Chookagian. Caitlin Chookagian isn't just a striker. We saw that out of her performance in Antonina Shevchenko. But if you really want to boil it down into two things, Calvillo has extremely good wrestling. Chookagian has very good volume striking. I like Calvillo's game plan in this one to just push a pace, get on top. We saw her do it in 5 rounds against Ai. I think she can do it in 3 rounds against Chookagian.
So I can't disagree with anything Craig said, and I'm sure a lot of you probably know where I'm going with this. I am going to pick Caitlin Chookagian. I don't like the performance against Andrade. It left a lot to be desired. But what's one thing Caitlin Chookagian can do? She knows how to win rounds. And Cynthia Calvillo beat a Jessica Ai, who had missed weight right before, and Jessica Ai just looked underwhelming in that fight. Maybe Cynthia Calvillo goes out here, double legs Caitlin Chookagian to the ground, and chokes her out. I wouldn't be surprised. It could happen in the first minute, but I do think the long-range attacks of Caitlin Chookagian are going to frustrate Cynthia Calvillo. She has a very boxing-heavy attack, and the kicks of Chookagian are going to be a real issue for her, because she's not going to be able to get into range for a lot of her stand-up. Now, yes, a lot of people are going to say, but Calvillo can catch a kick. It's a little different, because Caitlin Chookagian throws straight shots. She doesn't really throw looping body kicks. She'll throw push kick, push kick, push kick. So a lot of it's more to keep her opponent away from her than to actually do a lot of damage. So Caitlin Chookagian, not that she's going to win the fight, but she will get the decision. And I think that Caitlin Chookagian is probably going to win this one by decision.
Oh boy, Matt. So I'm going with Caitlin Chookagian. No, I'm just kidding. You're going with Caitlin Chookagian. I'm going with Cynthia Calvillo, and I really like Calvillo in this fight. And it's
don't
a great
use the
card.
L-word, Craig.
In our co-main event, we've got a title fight in this division. Valentina Shevchenko defending her belt against Jennifer Maia. In the main event, Deiveson Figueiredo and Alex Perez. So keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, Matt, as we always say.
Let's get into it.
What should be a really entertaining fight at 170 pounds, we have Platinum Mike Perry making the comeback after a big win over Mickey Gall, taking on the Dirty Bird, Tim Means. Matt, it's an all-action type of fight. Oh, yeah. It really is. These guys are both very proven finishers. And for Mike Perry, a little bit of a salty record in his last fight, but we're talking losses to Cowboy Cerrone, Vicente Luque by split, and Jeff Neal.
They're all very
stuff
good.
Like that's going to happen. For Tim Means, 3-2, a win over Ricky Rainey. He trains with Stephen Wonderboy Stop, Thompson. Right? A loss to Nico Price, a loss to Daniel Rodriguez in a fight that wasn't very close, a win over Thiago Alves, and then in his last fight, a really big win over Laureano Staropoli, and a fight that I was surprised straight up. I thought Argentina Staropoli was really going to push a pace, land those nice looping power shots, and win it.
It was over for the Dirty Bird.
And Tim Means fought one of those cerebral veteran gritty type of performances, and it was a nice throwback win for Tim Means in a fight where I counted him out, and a lot of people did as well. So we look at this one for the parts and pieces, and I mean, Matt, Tim Means, really sneaky in the clinch.
Oh,
nice kicks, nice straight shots, wild elbows too. For Mike Perry, I mean, the guy's a wild man. The guy's a wild man in and outside of the octagon. For better or for worse, you know what you're going to get out of him. And again, he's had some really high-profile fights in a career that it feels like it's been short, but he's already 20 fights deep into his pro fight career.
Mike Perry is very weird too, because Mike Perry, when you think about him, I always think about Mike Perry as No, he's not the best in the division. He's not the most technical guy out there, but he is going to put on a good fight no matter who you put him up against. Like, there was a point where on the same card, RDA fought Robbie Lawler. He fought Santiago Ponzinibbio on that, and he made a fairly good account of himself. Now, Ponzinibbio did start to pull away as the fight progressed, of course, because there's just, you can brawl for so long, and you can be, like, crazy technical for so long. So, Mike Perry faded in that, but losing to Ponzinibbio by decision, there is no shame in that whatsoever. That's really one of those fights that says, okay, I lost to a guy who's at the top of the division. No shame. Let's just recollect, figure out what I did wrong, and make some improvements. Instead, he jumped right back in there against Max Griffin. And that seems to be kind of where Mike Perry's career took a bit of a turn. And he was very active up until that Ponzinibbio fight, and that was the thing that people were loving Mike Perry for. He was crazy. He had fun at the weigh-ins. He had this crazy power and very must-see kind of style. And then he fought Max Griffin. And Max Griffin is a good UFC fighter. But he's not a Vicente Luque, he's not a, you know, Cowboy Cerrone. He's not really in that level with the other elite guys that Mike Perry's fought and lost to. And Max Griffin beat the brakes off poor Mike Perry. It wasn't close at all. Mike Perry just kept on relying on, oh, if I throw a big looping hook, maybe I can catch him and put him out. But that never came. And the boxing of Max Griffin was able to kind of piece apart Mike Perry. And it's weird because Mike Perry, you would think throughout his career, would kind of fix some of the recklessness and, you know, not want to throw as many big looping shots, kind of keep things more down the middle. He really hasn't, though. Mike Perry just has become more Mike Perry as he's progressed. And I know that seems like a weird thing to say, but what does Mike Perry do? He brawls, he'll throw in the occasional takedown. And the Mickey Gall fight, yes, his grappling looked fairly good. He defended a lot of takedowns, and his striking looked okay. But you have to understand, that's against Mickey Gall, who, yes, he was on Dana White's Looking for a Fight. Yes, you know, oh, Mickey, you're so fine. You're so fine, you blow my mind. But
hey. Sage Northcutt. He beat Sage Northcutt.
He did, but I think we can all agree, Mickey Gall is not a UFC caliber fighter. It would be really nice if he did get some wins outside the UFC and came back, but he's not the type of guy Mike Perry should be fighting. And Mike Perry looked good, but I don't even think he looked that great. And I understand his girl was his corner woman, and there was a lot of weird circumstances around that fight, but beating Mickey Gall isn't the most overwhelming and impressive thing to me. Tim Means in the Staropoli fight, it was a fight that he probably shouldn't have won. And I love Tim Means, but Craig was starting to get to me. He's always like, hey, Tim Means, it might be over. You just have to accept it. It's like when a dog's old and your parents are trying to explain it to you. That was like Craig with Tim Means and me. He was just like, hey, it might be over. And the Dirty Bird said, no, 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 like Dikembe Mutombo. Turned back the hands of time and actually put on a really good performance and a complete performance too. It didn't just show that he stuck into that, oh, I'll throw elbows and just be the Muay Thai fighter. He grappled in that fight. He showed a great gas tank. But we did see what we always know from Tim Means. The combinations on the feet when he lands are spicy. When he's landing elbows and punches, he does that kind of Sean Strickland, Nate Diaz, Max Holloway. It's weird that I started that list with Sean Strickland. But he doesn't throw everything into every punch. He's more than happy with, I'll pep you with a few shots. I'll see kind of where your defense is at. And then I'll throw power in the holes that I see. This fight to me is kind of obvious. Is Tim Means the better fighter than Mike Perry? I think in pretty much every aspect of MMA, if I'm being honest. I think he's a better striker, he's more technical, he has a good submission game, he's a fairly good wrestler himself. But Mike Perry has that God-given gift, if you will, where he can just shut you out with one punch, and Tim Means has had that happen to him. In the Nico Price fight, Means was beating him very badly. He was landing these beautiful combinations, head-body, kicks, knees, elbows. And then Nico Price lands one bomb moving backwards that breaks Tim Means' ankle and also knocks him out. And it's just, okay, so we know that Tim Means can win by being that really aggressive kind of Muay Thai guy, but we know he can lose that way. So it comes down to, do you think Mike Perry has the accuracy and the cardio to land that big bomb on Tim Means?
The fight for Tim Means that worries me, again, you bring one up, the Nico Price fight, but I also look at the fight that he had against Daniel Rodriguez, and we've talked about it. Daniel Rodriguez is the biggest wild man in this division. There's a lot of wild men. Mike Perry's another one. We can go through the list of wild men.
Diego Sanchez.
I hold Danny Rodriguez in and among the top five of the wild men of the welterweight division. Okay. And in the Danny Rodriguez fight against Tim Means, it was one of those ones where Rodriguez pressured him, caught him with some really good shots, and sunk in that submission. Who's to say Mike Perry can't do that? I mean, he's the type of guy that can rush in, wild hooks, he can get crazy, and he can really put together a finished product of a win and actually finish Tim Means. So you're right. It boils down to, and it's tough to oversimplify fights, but I'm going to do it as well. Mike Perry, more power, older Tim Means, 7 years older than Mike Perry is, lots of miles, because, I mean, we're talking about a guy that has over 40 pro fights at 36 years old, and he's been finished many times.
And he's not a boring fighter. Like, even those wins, Tim Means will take some damage, and that's why he is... I hope I'm not the only Tim Means fan out there. Please, can you solidify this? Is Tim Means a borderline fan favorite? Because to me, he definitely is. So I do think Tim Means, on the technical aspect, if he's able to push back Mike Perry, it'll be the worst thing for Mike Perry. If Mike Perry's able to push back Tim Means, it'll be the worst thing for him. I do think this really comes down to who can move forward on the other. If Mike Perry is moving forward on Tim Means, even if Means is landing some of those combos, if he's reacting to Mike Perry, he can get clipped by a shot. And I would say it's the same vice versa. Mike Perry has shown a phenomenal chin in the UFC. He can eat a lot of big shots. I mean, the only stoppage loss he's ever had was to Jeff Neal.
And Cowboy.
Well, a cowboy, but that was by submission. So a little different because I don't see Tim Means going for the submission, but fair. He did get stopped in that one. Jeff Neal, if he kicks anyone in the head, is going to knock them out. So Tim Means, not the most kick-heavy guy. I don't see that happening, but I like the combos. I like the output, and I like the cardio from Tim Means. I know I pick him every fight we do these for, and I don't mean to, I promise, but I do. I see Tim Means as... This is one of those veteran wins that a veteran can go out there and get. And I know we had one against Staropoli, so maybe I'm just hot off that performance. But Tim Means is a very cerebral fighter. You can tell he is thinking as he's doing things. And for Mike Perry, if he does just throw those hooks and he's missing a lot and he's missing big every time, and if he does start to get reckless, Tim Means is going to find the holes through a lot of those shots, put him down.
Matt, I mean, this is a really tricky fight because if we have a look at the odds, a little bit of a surprise. Tim Means open as plus 130. He's now at a plus 118. If you look at Mike Perry, open up a minus 150. The line dropped to about a minus 175. He's now at a minus 144. If we have a look at the total Tapology votes, 434 of them, 70% going Perry, 65% going knockout. I want to add this one into here, Matt, the fact that Mike Perry went on that two-fight losing streak. You talked about it. Jeff Neal, Vicente Luque was a split decision. Then he beats Mickey Gall. If I've ever seen a Steve Nash finger roll layup, that was the fight. That
really
was.
If I've ever seen a bigger drop in competition, and I don't mean that, again, I'm being very negative to Mickey Gall, but you have to think, Vicente Luque can legitimately beat pretty much anyone in the top 15. I know Wonderboy whooped that ass, but still. Jeff Neal's in the same boat, too, so if you lose to those guys, it's not the end of the world. But when you only beat Mickey Gall, it's just, that's the range in which I can judge you. The whole screen.
Now we're somewhere in the middle. This kind of feels like a Mike Perry should beat old Tim Means and get a win. That's what it feels like to me. But Tim Means showed me, again, in that last fight against Staropoli, that he had some staying power. He's still a very technical fighter. He hasn't necessarily lost a step per se. And I look at that fight, it wasn't that long ago. It was only 3 months ago. For Mike Perry, the Mickey Gall fight was about 4 months ago. Great win for him. His personal life has taken some weird turns that there's no sake of getting into them here, but the circumstances are not good. The other thing that we have to mention in closing, Mike Perry was supposed to be fighting Robbie Lawler. So you're going from Lawler, or at least perceived Robbie Lawler, to Tim Means. Now, I know Robbie Lawler hasn't been good lately, but you know what kind of a fight you're going to get out of Robbie Lawler, or at least you hope to. Lately, you have to wrestle Robbie Lawler. You don't want to strike with him, you just wrestle him. So who knows what Mike Perry was doing. Also, was he going to have Cam Soda girls in his corner? Like, he was pretty much shopping out Darren his corner Till. Services. Maybe Darren Till. So we'll see what happens there. Latorre Gonzalez will most likely be there. We'll see what happens. For old Tim Means, he just still trains at that hole-in-the-wall gym in Albuquerque for fun. And it's pretty cool because he's been committed there for a very, very long time. I'm looking forward to this fight. Final thoughts. Who are you going with here?
I've said about six times. Tim Means is going to win this fight. It's not a lock because I refuse to do those anymore. Trust me. Some people took those to heart. I think Tim Means is the more technical guy. And whenever you have a guy who does have that veteranness on his side, and even Mike Perry, to be honest, he's been in the UFC for long enough at this point that he's not the new kid on the block. Like, his UFC debut was UFC 202. That was the second time Nate fought Connor. And people are like, oh, well, what? That was 2 years ago? No, that was like 4.5 years ago. So it's a strange fight. I think Tim Means should be able to get the win. I think it'll be very exciting for as long as it lasts. And I would not be surprised at all if this ends in stoppage for either guy.
Yeah, Matt, same thing. I mean, very volatile one, very tough one to pick. I do like the performance out of Tim Means in his last one. I'm going to go with the recency bias there. I am going with the Dirty Birds. So, Matt, we're in agreement for the underdog here. Tim Means to get the win. Really looking forward to this fight. We get a great card. Great co-main main. Flyweight titles on the line. Will Shevchenko and Figueiredo be able to hold on? We'll find out, Matt. Really looking forward to it. So keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. And as we always say, let's get into it. Really interesting clash in our co-main event as we have Valentina Shevchenko looking to retain her belt again and again and again. She takes on Brazil's Jennifer Maia. Matt, Jennifer Maia, a bit of a different test, coming out of Shoot the Box Monstro down in Brazil. And Matt, we know how good her grappling is, how good her jiu-jitsu is, black belt in jiu-jitsu. They claim a black belt in Muay Thai, and Muay Thai really a strong suit for Jennifer Maia. And you saw that in her last fight, as Matt, she took that title shot from Joanne Calderwood and just took it out from under her and really put on a great performance, gets a win there, gets a finish there. Such an impressive finish that she gets this opportunity and really leapfrogs everybody and gets a shot at Valentina Shevchenko. And Matt, you might look at Jennifer Maia's last five fights, you go, well, geez, she lost the decision to Liz Carmouche, who ended up fighting Shevchenko for the belt and losing. And she has a loss in the fight before Calderwood, a loss to Caitlin Chookagian, in which Caitlin Chookagian would go on to fight Shevchenko and end up losing. Jennifer Maia is that test. What do you think about this fight?
So Jennifer Maia is going to be an interesting fight. It's a very interesting challenge for her because with everyone against Valentina, she's just so good at everything. You really have to think of, okay, what is the weak point of Valentina's game? If she has one, I would argue the wrestling is. Now, again, we're dealing with like 10 out of 10 in striking, 10 out of 10 in grappling. So we're just, you know, we're pulling straws at this one, just trying to figure out what she doesn't do all that well. But Maya's grappling, I do think, will give Valentina at least some problems. She's very heavy on top, has good top pressure. And we saw in the Calderwood fight, Calderwood was like Andre Iguodala. She was going up for a layup in the 2016 finals. And then Jennifer Maia, out of nowhere, just blocked by James. And then she got the title shot. So it is kind of it's strange circumstances for how she did get it, but she's been in the division for a long time. Former Invicta champ too, so 5-round fights won't be a new thing for Jennifer Maia. I know that's something, for instance, Alex Perez never really been in that 5-round environment. So for Jennifer Maia, this is something that is not new to her whatsoever. I do think the gas tank will hold up. And her Muay Thai has definitely improved. We've even seen it in the short amount of time she's only been in the UFC. If you go back to the Invicta fights for Jennifer Maia, very green striker. But then, and I don't even mean that as like a technical point. You can just tell that she's a lot more comfortable of a striker, I should say, as she's been able to progress throughout her career. Because when you have the jiu-jitsu of a Jennifer Maia, why would you ever be worried about getting taken down? You can throw with a lot of power. You can throw a lot of kicks because what's the worst thing that's going to happen? Someone's going to do your own thing for you and take you down. So I do think Jennifer Maia has a few different aspects of her game that are going to give Valentina trouble. But for Valentina, like, there's not much we can say that hasn't already been said so many times. What's she good at? Well, Muay Thai is all right. She's a very good striker. Her ground game, filthy. And we've definitely seen, there's like a heightened aggression to Valentina at 125. I don't know if she just bit her after the second Nunes loss. And she's like, okay, I'm going down there and just anyone in front of me, I'm taking care of. Because she's been on an absolute, I want to call it like a Legends Tour, if you will. But it's just been a path of destruction for Valentina. Hasn't had an overly competitive fight at 125. And it's
weird.
Joanna,
maybe?
And that's true. I actually thought Joanna did fairly well against Valentina. Go back and watch that fight. I thought Joanna, and I know this is, I thought she might have won one to maybe two rounds, but she actually seemed to be in the fight. And I do think it was a case where Valentina's not the most intimidating person, but she's the most intimidating person. It's that aura that she gives off where she looks you dead in the eyes. She has that knife on her hip.
Gun tattoo with the bullets?
But I just mean, if you see her, you don't look at her and think like, oh wow, she must be an MMA fighter. She could walk around the street and you'd never think anything of it. But when she gets into that cage, the violence in which she, I don't know, just puts out amongst people is truly impressive. Now, for Valentina, the up in aggression, the only down part for that could be, well, how's her cardio going to fare? But with Valentina, you know, she has such good technique. She's never overthrowing anything and really putting herself in harm's way. Listen, if you can fight Amanda Nunes for 8 rounds without getting finished, you deserve a trophy. So Valentina, it's less what can Jennifer Maia do and what she's really good at. It's just, I don't know what beats Valentina Shevchenko. I know Amanda Nunes can. I know a bigger, more physical person can. And Jennifer Maia does share, she doesn't, of course, have the striking of Nunes or that big power, but she does have some of the wrestling and the grappling aspects of Nunes' game that she could be able to take advantage of. It's just really hard when you look at Valentina to see, okay, how is she going to lose her title? I don't see her getting knocked out by Jennifer Maia. Jennifer Maia could land a good strike. She could make it competitive on the feet, but I don't see her having this big power edge where she can crack Valentina, put her down. Can she submit her? She can, but the wrestling's kind of iffy. Jennifer Maia has good wrestling, but we've never really seen that to be a weakness from Valentina. If anything, she uses it as an advantage. She always goes for takedowns, and it's the weird thing. It's a very Joe Roganism, but Joe Rogan's always, oh, how good her striking is. How good her striking is. Valentina in the UFC is She's not more of a wrestler, but we do see a lot of her grappling in her fights. She submitted Juliana Pena. She was able to beat, I mean, Priscilla Cachoeira was just, that was a sad fight.
Zombie girl.
And Kaylin Chookagian, of course, too. That fight was completely dominated on the ground by Valentina. So we're dealing with someone who, their striking is the best aspect of their game, but they've been able to really go out there and show the improvements in their grappling throughout time. So it's not to detract anything from Maya, and I do think Maya has a few areas that can give Shevchenko problems. It's just, I don't know if she can do it for the 25 minutes.
And I mean, you look at Valentina Shevchenko, and again, these two fighters share two common opponents. For Valentina, the one fight against Liz Carmouche that ends in controversy, had the cut, so they rematch while Valentina's a champ in the UFC, and Valentina runs away with it. And then Jennifer fight. Maya loses the fight against Carmouche. The other fighter, Kaylin Chookagian, Valentina Shevchenko runs away with the fight. Jennifer Maya loses the decision. Take that for what it's worth. The other thing that I noticed on an MMA forum guy pointing out the fact that Jennifer Maya, this is one of the first southpaws that she's faced. Always a tricky look, especially if you've never seen it. Now we got to talk about the disciplines and the belts and whatnot. And again, I talked about it with Jennifer Maya, black belt in Muay Thai, black belt in Jiu-Jitsu. For Valentina Shevchenko, master of sport in Taekwondo, master of sport in Judo, master of sport in Muay Thai, master of sport in boxing, master of sport in kickboxing. She is a traveling show of martial arts. And Matt, I will take this to my grave as one of the weird martial arts things that I will know. And just, it'll stay up in my brain. When Valentina Shevchenko went to fight Joanna Jane Jacek in Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
Might have heard of it.
Valentina and Antonina Shevchenko trained in good old Brunswick, Maine there, you know, eh? That's and we're big good. We're big Maine guys. Obviously, we're repping Canada, but we're just an hour's drive from Maine. How friggin' weird was it?
Very.
How wicked weird was it that Valentina and Antonina just decided, hey, we're going to rent a place by a lake. We're going to train at a hole-in-the-wall gym and get ready for one of the biggest fights of Valentina's career. Like, it's just so weird.
The only thing weirder than it was the way which people found out. She kind of tagged them on an Instagram picture once. Or no, it wasn't. It was just under a tweet. She didn't even really say, like, oh, I'm changing gyms. Now, I understand it's kind of a well-known thing for the Shevchenko sisters. Yeah, like you had mentioned, traveling circus. They aren't afraid to, I'll say cross-train. I understand that's not really the term, but they do train in a lot of different gyms. And I do like that. Now, yes, there's something to be said for, again, a basketball reference. If you play for the same coach for a long time and he has one system and then a new coach comes in, there could be a little bit of time to kind of adjust your team to the system. But with Shevchenko, it's more that her system stays the same, but her teammates change every now and then. And I do think that's a good thing. It gives her a lot of new looks in the gym because she's never just getting safe with that one stable of fighters. A lot of fighters talk about this where, you know, you spar with the same guys for a year, 2 years. You're both really high level. But at a certain point, you're not really learning to train against your opponent. You're just fighting Kamaru Usman again for training. Like Gilbert Burns and Usman talked about that. Like they trained all the time together. So for Valentina, I like the fact she gets a lot of different training partners. I like the fact that really there's not a massive weakness in her game. And we talk about this a lot, and I feel like it has to be mentioned. Normally when there is one of these like plus 800 sizable underdogs, there's that one thing that you can kind of hold on to hope for. And maybe Jennifer Maya can go out there and secure a double leg and get her back. I just don't see it. I don't think Maya can out-grapple Shevchenko. I don't think she can out-wrestle her. I think if anything, Shevchenko herself will be the one going for the takedown. I know that might sound crazy just because of how big of an advantage that she has on the feet, but Shevchenko has shown her ground and pound is elite. It's not in like the Khabib category, but her ground and pound is phenomenal. She makes you pay for all the time you spend on bottom. And if Jennifer Maya is comfortable off her back trying to set up submissions, she will be eating a lot of damage.
That's the thing too. And I mean, if you have a look at the total Tapology votes, Matt, out of 556, wow. 97% going Shevchenko, 67% saying she's going to get the win by knockout. If you have a look at the odds, Valentina Shevchenko, your overwhelming favorite, the biggest favorite on the card, open a minus 750. Little blip on the radar. Somebody put a bunch of money on Maya on Saturday morning, but Shevchenko right now minus 1385 average, best fight odds for Maya open to plus 550. She's now at a plus 792. And again, Matt Serra beat George St. Pierre. Shannon Dobson beat Maria Agapova. I just don't see it in this fight. I mean, it's tough to not pick the favorite in this one. Valentina Shevchenko, if we're talking the top five best women's fighters of all time, Chris Cyborg, Amanda Nunes, Ronda Rousey, Valentina Shevchenko. I'm just going off the top five. Shevchenko, and then, I mean, your Joanna. Fifth. Joanna, Holly Holm. I mean, there's some fighters that are in that conversation. But man, Matt, Valentina Shevchenko lost because of a cut in the Carmouche fight. Kudos to Carmouche. You got to win.
You cut her.
Nunes was close. And Nunes is the best fighter in women's MMA history.
Arguably one of the best just fighters in history. Exactly. So, yeah, Shevchenko, you've lost to the GOAT in a weight class that's not even your own. So I really know she's going to lose in her own weight class. Kudos Jennifer Maia. Again, it's a great opportunity. If she can spring the upset, we'll be talking about this for years to come. It's just, I really don't see this being one of those times.
Matt, we're both going with Valentina Shevchenko to defend. Hold on to her belt. Really looking forward to this card. We have a great main event coming up, so make sure you stay tuned for that. If you missed any of the fights, check out the playlist over there. But we got Figueiredo Perez to look forward to. So Matt, without further ado, as we always say with Fight Night Picks, let's get into it. And it's finally time for our main event of the evening. Matt, you could call this UFC 2 Figgy 5, as we have Deiveson Figueiredo, Deus de Guerra, taking on Alex Perez. Matt, it's a good fight. It's a really interesting fight, and Alex Perez kind of falling into the shot, because originally it was supposed to be Deiveson Figueiredo taking on your former bantamweight champ, Cody Garbrandt. Garbrandt out of the fight. Moreno Perez, that falls out. Alex Perez gets the title shot. And of course, we have Brandon Moreno lower down on this card, taking on Brandon Royval in a fight that could very well be a fight of the night. So if you haven't checked that video out, please do. But overall, this is a great pairing. I mean, Deiveson Figueiredo, since the loss to Jussie Formiga, who, oh, by the way, Alex Perez just beat, has gone on a four-fight heater. And for Figueiredo, we talk about these wins. Pantoja, Tim Elliott, Joseph Benavidez, one for the title where he missed weight, one for the title where he made weight.
One for the money, two for the show.
Finish them both. And for Alex Perez, in his last five fights, I mean, he has the lone blemish to Joseph Benavidez, but the other wins, the John Moraga win was a big one. John Moraga was even before Jose Torres, Mark De La Rosa, Jordan Espinosa, and Jussie Formiga to get into this shot. Really interesting fights. Both of these guys have finishing potential. I know that's something that people are going to spit out at you a lot. But Matt, since the flyweight purge of a couple of years ago, this division is absolutely in fuego.
It's a phenomenal division. And yes, it sucks that they had to cut so many fighters. The good thing about it is, though, only the super elite are left. And I know that is kind of unfortunate to anyone who got cut, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. But let's be honest, like, the worst elite guy right now is probably Alejandro Pantoja, and he is an absolute monster. And that's the great fight for Deiveson that he had on his way to the title that I do think is going to... Not that Alex Perez fights entirely like Pantoja, but I do think we can take a lot from that fight. Because Pantoja, what do we know? He's phenomenal on the ground. He's got really good submissions. But on the feet, he has power. And he's one of the few guys who, at 125, can match some of the power that Deiveson Figueiredo brings. And he couldn't even do anything to Figueiredo. Like, Figueiredo's chin... I always think that, and it's always something that I have in my mind, where when you have a big guy who just is blowing the doors off everyone, you always kind of wonder in the back of your head, well, what's their durability like? You know, like, what happens when they're on the receiving end of those big shots? And that was something I was worried about with Figueiredo, because when every single one of your fight, other than the Jared Brooks fight, of course, is you just dominating your opponent, outstriking them, and having that certain swagger that Deiveson Figueiredo has, because he does carry himself in a certain way that it's not cocky. You can just tell that, like, he's very... He's in tune with his abilities.
He's the Dos Equis guy of MMA, because this guy's a sushi chef, he cuts hair, and he's also a champion of a division.
100%, and he's very good at all three from what the UFC countdown shows tell us. The sushi looked beautiful.
They're not going to tell you he's a terrible sushi chef.
Could you imagine?
Chef.
They're like, yeah, no, we had to kick him out. But no, Alex Perez does have a few things in his game that will give Figueiredo problems. Of course, phenomenal wrestler, really good grappler. He has been kind of caught in weird submissions, not submissions, but positions, excuse me, on the ground himself. The Joseph Benavidez fight is a weird one, and I don't bring that up because I know what people are going to say. Oh, well, MMA math doesn't work. Just because Figueiredo beat Benavidez and Benavidez knocked out Perez, that doesn't mean that Figueiredo is going to knock out Perez. And I agree with you. The fact, though, that Joseph Benavidez, who I wouldn't say is an exceptionally hard puncher, I think he's a very good striker. I think if he lands clean shots, he can put you away. Check both Jussie Formiga fights for that. But Alex Perez basically got finished twice in the first round by Joseph Benavidez. And again, Benavidez has speed, he has good power. But that's a bad sign when you're about to fight Deiveson Figueiredo, who, yes, his cardio isn't as good as Joseph Benavidez. His power is so much more through the roof. It's not even, like, I don't think people understand. Deiveson Figueiredo, he doesn't have, like, Francis Ngannou power, but it's close for flyweight. Like, when he lands clean shots... It's when he lands on your glove, it makes that big, like, that noise. And then when he lands on your chin, you go down. it's not a lot of Deniston Figueiredo throwing out touchers and feelers and then landing that big bomb. He walks very upright. He has a very upright stance. And I do think a little bit of that, just side note, is to bait takedowns, because Deniston Figueiredo's guillotine is phenomenal. Check the Tim Elliott fight for that. I know Tim Elliott's been submitted before, but just the way in which he was able to pull it off, Tim Elliott shoots for a takedown quick. Deniston Figueiredo locks up that neck like Brian Ortega and is able to submit him. So although Perez has the more grappling-centric game, Deniston Figueiredo is more than game on the ground.
Here's something I'm really interested in, because for Alex Perez at this point, you're 28 years old, you have 29 professional fights, and you talked about it, the grappling, the wrestling, it is very good. He beat Jordan Espinosa, who's a good wrestler in his own right. This is a talking point, and it has to be a talking point. I know it's not just going to be one for us, it's going to be one for everyone, but you look at the fight that Deniston Figueiredo did have against Jussie Formiga, he lost that fight soundly. 30-27. Matt, I remember before the first Joseph Benavidez fight, apparently Matt's a clairvoyant at points.
Every now and then.
And you talked about the fact that the weight cut for Deniston Figueiredo is an issue, and it was, because he wasn't able to win the belt clearly in his first fight. They ran it back. Didn't really seem like cutting weight, or didn't really seem like making the weight was as big of an issue. But man, it's still a question mark. If it's a question mark five fights ago, if it's a question mark two fights ago, it's a question mark in this one.
100%. And if you go back and look at that story in the Formiga fight, Deniston claims that he cut almost 40 pounds. That tells you how big this guy is and how hard he must hit. Like,
he's eating a lot of sushi.
He is eating a lot of sushi. I mean, I don't blame him.
He's goofing with a guy that looks just like Bruno Silva on the beach on the countdown.
He is.
Weird. And Bruno, if that is Bruno Silva... And you know what? I'm this far into it. I need to do more research. But if it's 185-pound Bruno Silva and Deniston Figueiredo is just wrestling, picking him up, and having fun and having a time, as all the people in town are watching them goof on the beach, it's like watching the montage between Rocky and Apollo Creed, except there's no cool music.
Just good fun.
Just two guys wrestling on the beach, except one guy's like three times as big as the other. Continue.
And, okay, so Deniston Figueiredo cut about 40 pounds that week, and he said that that was the reason that really drained on his weight. Now, I understand, or drained on his cardio, excuse me. I understand that. That is a solid excuse, if you will. You're still the one who decided to get up to that weight and decide to do such a drastic weight cut. Like, I love how people always try to point to things outside of the fight itself that are still the fighter's responsibility. Now, again, you guys can probably tell we're 6.5 minutes into this, leaning quite hard Deniston Figueiredo in this fight. But the weight is such a big question mark. And again, I did it once, so I can never really do it again, but I'm not going to say Deniston Figueiredo is going to miss weight in this. I do think his first title defense means a lot to him. I think the fact that he is the main event of a pay-per-view, his first headlining gig, and I'm sure he knows that if he goes out there and knocks out Alex Perez in impressive fashion, he might not get another headlining gig on a pay-per-view, but there's more than likely, you know, a co-main event to a big title fighter, something along those lines. Like, I do think Deniston Figueiredo does understand that, okay, now that I'm champ, I do have to get, you know, my shit together, for lack of a better term, because he knows that he comes from very humble beginnings. He will let you know himself in those countdown videos, and this can all go pretty fast. Tyron Woodley said it himself after he lost the belt. Tyron Woodley, direct quote, "I blew a lot of damn money." It happens. You get involved in the lifestyle, it can happen. But I do think Figueiredo, if he does kind of get, I say the personal side, but when I say that, I mean much more, you know, the weight cutting and sort of the self-care aspect of MMA down, I think he's going to be a champ for a long time at 125. And that's saying something when it's a division that is so talent stacked right now.
And I mean, Matt, for Alex Perez, great opportunity here. Coming out of a good camp with Team Oyama, I think having a guy to train with, and it sucks that his fight fell out last weekend due to the weight cut. But Luis Smolka, a guy like that to train for a fight like this, I think that's a perfect training partner to have to get ready for it. And I mean, Matt, if we have a look at the odds here, I was a little bit surprised with him because Alex Perez opened up as a plus 180 underdog. That line shot up pretty quick. He's now at a plus 246 for Deniston Figueiredo making that first title defense, first official. Open -210, now he's at a minus 312. That line has moved at about a 32% clip towards Deniston Figueiredo. If we look at the Tapology votes, Matt, at a 520 total votes, 94% Figueiredo, 78% predicting a knockout win for Deniston Figueiredo. What I've seen twice in a row, could I see it three times in a row? I don't know. What do you think?
Deniston Figueiredo is going to win this fight, whether it be on the feet, whether it be on the ground. Again, I think so high of Joseph Benavidez. I really do, because he doesn't have a weakness in his game. He's a great wrestler. He's a great striker. He's super fast. He can react to things well. And Deniston Figueiredo not only outstruck him, he kind of out-techniqued him. When you watch what Figueiredo is able to do with some of his longer range attacks, he delays his punches. And it's something that not a lot of people do, but he'll throw like 100% speed, 100% speed, and then he'll kind of faint. But he won't faint. He'll just throw a punch a little bit slower. But they all land. And we know the power that he possesses. He has it in both hands. He has it in both feet. He's extremely explosive in this division. And like you mentioned, one of the bigger guys in this division maybe doesn't really belong in this division. But at the end of the day, Deviston Figueroa is hard to pick against. Lights out on the ground, lights out on the feet. He does get tired, but I don't know if Alex Perez is the guy who's going to be able to take advantage of that.
If Figueroa gets tired, if the weight cut is a huge issue, you have a guy that can grapple and grapple to no end in Alex Perez. And there's definitely a method of victory for Alex Perez. If he can outlast Deviston Figueroa, and if the weight cut is an issue, look at what GCA Formiga did. Again, MMA math doesn't work that way, but there's certainly a path for Alex Perez, more so than maybe those votes, yeah. And the odds really do show you. I was kind of surprised that at open, it's minus 210 for the champ, plus 180 for the challenger. But again, I will definitely side with Deviston Figueiredo on this one. The guy's power is off the charts. His submission abilities are great. And if that is truly Bruno Silva, you let me know, Bruno. You tell me, because you're supposed to be in the UFC, you goofball. And you goofed on it, I was looking forward to that. But overall, I think this fight should be great. I'm siding with the champ, Matt. We both have Deviston Figueiredo to get the win. Two title fights. Shevchenko Maia, Figueiredo Perez. And we have a great card full of great fights. If anything falls out, if anything changes, you keep locked in with Fight Night Picks. And you have to check out Question Mark Kicks on Saturday, where we get a final say. Maybe Figueiredo's weight cut goes bad and we change our pick. We have the opportunity to do so. We get to hang out with you in the chat. And you can support the channel there, and you can check out some of the merch on the site, fightnightpicks.net. So Matt, as we always say, with Fight Night Picks, let's get into it.